We have a quorum, and I hereby call this meeting to order. My name is Elizabeth Quirk, and it is my honor and privilege to serve as your moderator for this 2018 annual town meeting. Please allow me to introduce to you the LS singing group Accent A Cappella, who will lead us in singing the national anthem, and a member of that group, Emily Greeley, who will lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. And I now invite you to rise, if you are able, for the singing of the anthem, and you may stay standing for the pledge. Thank you.
To the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. You may be seated. Good evening. If you're just arriving, if you could find a seat as quickly as possible, and if any of you who are on the edges of the aisles wouldn't mind scooting in so that latecomers don't have to climb over quite as many people, that would be fantastic. I know the aisle seats are the most desirable, and the seems unfair to let the latecomers get them, but for... I'll speak louder. Please move into the middle of the rows if it becomes an issue of people needing seats. It will also make the meeting go faster if people don't have to scramble. Thank you. Okay, as we have done at the past few town meetings, we are providing closed captioning of these proceedings. The screens can be found on the stage, and please feel free to move closer if that would be helpful to you to see the screens. For the record, I have examined and found in order the call of the meeting, the officer's return of service, and confirmation of timely mailing of the warrant to residents. I can also report to the hall that the certified free cash, according to Christine Nyhan, the town accountant, is $1,783,257. Technically, the moderator is required to read each article and all of the related procedural documents to the hall verbatim. As you know, Sudbury has adopted the practice of omitting the reading of the warrant by the moderator with the consent of the hall. Therefore, may I have a motion to dispense with the reading of the call of the annual town meeting, the officer's return of service notice, and the individual articles of the warrant? Is there a second? Thank you, I see a second. This requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please signify by raising your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. In the event that I am unable to preside over an article or we need to open up overflow space, it is necessary that we appoint an assistant moderator. I have asked David Pendleton to serve in that role. May I have a motion approving the appointment of David Pendleton as assistant town moderator for the 2018 annual town meeting? Thank you. Is there a second? Thanks. This requires a majority vote. All in favor, please signify by raising your cards. All opposed? It passes unanimously. I'd now like to take a moment to introduce our hardworking and dedicated town officials. For the benefit of the hall, I would ask you that you raise your hand when your name is called. To my right is Town Clerk Rosemary Harvell, and to her right, Assistant Town Clerk Rose Miranda. To my immediate left sits Town Council Jonathan Silverstein. To his left, Town Manager Melissa Rodriguez. And then we have the Board of Selectmen. Bob Hardy, Chair. Len Simon, Vice Chair. Susan Giuliano, Pat Brown, and Dan Carty. And finally on stage is the Finance Committee, Brian Semple, Chair, Jeff Barker, Vice Chair, Susan Berry, Joan Carlton, Jeffrey Atwater, Adrian Davies, Jose Garcia Metin, Tammy Dufault, and Eric Polk. And then I have folks who are sitting facing the stage, Mark Thompson, Technology Administrator, Patty Golden, Senior Administrative Assistant to the Town Manager, Marianne Bilodeau, Assistant Town Manager and HR Director, Dennis Kahane, Finance Director, Christine Nyhan, Town Accountant, Cynthia Gary, Director of Assessing. We have Elaine Jones, Legal Assistant, Layla Frank, Information Officer, Megan Donahue, Director of Planning and Community Development, Lillian Vert, Planning and Zoning Coordinator, Kayla McNamara, Park and Rec Director, John Whalen, Fire Chief, Scott Nix, Police Chief, Dan Nason, DPW Director, Bill O'Rourke, Deputy DPW Director, Mark Herwick, Inspector of Buildings, Bill Murphy, Health Director, Esme Green, Goodnell Library Director, Debbie Deneen, Conservation Coordinator, Deb Galloway, Council on Aging Director. And finally, in the rear of the hall, keeping us safe and secure tonight, are Officers Walsh and Shea. Fire exits are at the rear of the auditorium where you entered, as well as in front through the stage. Bathrooms are located immediately across the hall from the rear exit doors as well as outside the cafeteria. There are materials on tables where you entered about various warrant articles. There are also extra warrants. I'm not sure exactly where. Oh, are they down here? Okay. If you need a warrant, the scouts could deliver one to your seat. So if you would raise your hand, if you would like a warrant delivered. Right here in front, boys, if we could have one. Anyone else? Thank you. Okay, and I see a few hands in the back toward the left also. And maybe just take a stack and kind of walk up the aisles. That might be the fastest thing. Okay, we'll move on while those are being delivered. Thank you. And actually, while you're working hard, I will take this chance to thank the Boy Scouts and their leaders for all their help tonight with the warrant delivery and with running the mics especially. We have from Troop 63, which is led by Peter Fishman, Colton Simon, Andrew Mossy, Nolan Schlesman, and Casey Tupta. And from Troop 61, led by Jonathan Kosuth, we have Ryan Warzinski. So thank you very much. And finally, last but not least, I'd like to thank the staff and crew of Sudbury TV who do an excellent job covering town meetings and other events. And those folks are Lynn Puro, Terry Lockhart, Cliff McGann, Matt Cranson, Vicki Fox, Frank Walls, and Judy Faust. I have two announcements from the town. On Saturday, May 19th, we will be having a community green-up. This will include the annual roadside cleanup, an opportunity to pick up rain barrels, which must be ordered in advance, and a repair cafe. For more information, please refer to the flyer you received in the warrant that was mailed to your home, or visit the town website at sudbury.ma.us. And also online, there is the Livable Sudbury survey available now. All Sudbury residents ages 18 and over are encouraged to participate. You'll find a link to the survey on the town website that I mentioned under Livable Communities. I will now recognize Representative Carmen Gentile for a series of proclamations.
Thank you very much, Madam Moderator.
You're welcome.
So we have a number of people who have served the town for a number of years who are retiring or leaving service at this time, or and I'd like to recognize them. I have Susan Giuliano. We have popular selectman. So we want to thank you for your service. I have with me a citation from the House of Representatives. Be it hereby known to all that the Massachusetts House of Representatives offers its sincerest congratulations to you, Susan. Susan Giuliano, in recognition of your service to the town of Sudbury as a member of the Board of Selectmen, the entire membership extends its very best wishes and expresses the hope for future good fortune and continued success in all endeavors. It was given this 7th day of May 2018 at the State House by Robert A. DeLeo, Speaker of the House, and offered by myself. Thank you, Susan. And we all moved, most of us moved to Sudbury because of the schools. And the schools are, you know, they are the way they are because we participate. And we participate, some of us step up to become school committee members. But we want to recognize Lucy St. George for your service in the town of Sudbury as a member of the Sudbury Public Schools. And, of course, the school committee establishes policy, but to run the schools, we need a superintendent. And we've been very fortunate to have Ann Wilson with us these last years, and she'll be leaving us all too soon. We want to recognize you in recognition of your many years of service to the town of Sudbury as superintendent of the Sudbury Public Schools. Thank you. Of course, we're parts of two school districts. We've got Lincoln Sudbury, and we want to recognize Gerald Quirk for his service on the Lincoln Sudbury School Committee. I hope the next person is here tonight. I haven't seen him, so I hope he's in the hall. This is for Jim Kelly. Are you here, Jim? Not here? No. Well, this is for Jim Kelly in recognition of his many years of 24/7 service to the town of Sudbury as facilities director and otherwise. And I'm thinking he'll be here later tonight, or maybe he'll be here tomorrow. But, you know, he worked for the town for many years. One other person who's volunteered for the town for many years would sometimes call him up and say, now, Jim, if you're up on a roof, don't take this call. And once and what Jim would do is, if we had a big snowstorm or other big weather event, he would actually go out and he'd go to the vulnerable buildings in town. He'd actually go up on the roof to see how things were going. And one day he answered the phone and he said, "Well, I am on the roof." So this is for Jim, and I'll make sure he gets it.
Thank you very much, Representative. I now recognize Susan Giuliano for a resolution in memory of those citizens who have served the town and passed away during the preceding year.
Whereas the town of Sudbury has enjoyed the blessing of those in the community who gave of their time and talent to enrich the quality of life in our town, and whereas this past year has seen several of its citizens and employees who have rendered public service and civic duty pass from among us. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the town of Sudbury extend its heartfelt sympathy to the families of these persons and recognize their service and dedication to the community. Margaret Demotica Angela Santo, Agnes Brooks, Sally Jo Rensier Kyra, Judith Cope, Mary Elizabeth Kelly Core, Ellen Sals Crone, Marshall Deutsch, Margaret R. Fredrickson, Robert D. Hall, Faye Hamilton, Don Hutchinson, Josephine Kieswetter, Neil J. McGilvray, Virginia Natale, Albert Palmer, Barbara L. Pontecorvo, Brenton Clark Taylor, Lawrence W. Tai, and Margaret M. Yergotis.
Thank you, Ms. Giuliano. I'm just going to adjust my mic here for a minute. Bear with me. Okay, we're now on Article 1. For many years, it has been our tradition at annual town meeting to honor someone who has performed valuable service to the town by asking him or her to make a motion under Article 1 of the warrant. This year, we honor retired Fire Chief Bill Miles. I ask that he please come forward to the podium at the front of the hall. Because Chief Miles is not a Sudbury resident and no longer technically a Sudbury staff member, I will need to get permission of the hall for him to speak. If you're in favor of allowing this, please raise your card. If anyone is opposed, please raise your card. That passes unanimously. Thank you. Chief Miles for a motion.
Article 1. Here reports. Move to accept the reports of the town boards, commissions, officers, and committees as printed in the 2017 town report, or as otherwise presented, subject to the correction of errors, if any, where found.
I noticed there is a typo in the motion. It should be 2018 reports. Is that correct? No. It is 2017. I'm sorry. My mistake. Carry on. I carry on. Is there a second? Excellent. Board of Selectmen, do you have a position?
The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
And a majority vote is required for this. All in favor of Article 1, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you very much, Chief
Thank
Miles.
You.
Thank you. great. I got the embarrassing mistake out of the way. So now it's all smooth sailing, right? Okay. So before we get on to the substance of the rest of the meeting, I do have some procedural matters that I would like to review. How many of you are here for the first time? Oh, good. Several. Welcome. And it's fantastic to have new folks among us. And so I'm just really glad to see it's not just the same old familiar faces in the crowd. Even though many of you are seasoned town meeting attenders, a few key points do bear repeating. And I will also refer you to the front matter of your warrant. There are other fun facts about town meeting there as well. Every matter that is voted on at town meeting must come in the form of a motion. The warrant articles themselves are not self-starting, but a motion may be made to, quote, move in the words of the article. Unless a presenter moves in the words of the article exactly as it is printed in the warrant, he or she must explain to the hall the changes in the motion and how it differs from the words that appear in the warrant. All motions of substance, including main motions and motions to amend, must be delivered to me, to the town clerk, and to Mr. Thompson, the technology administrator, in writing before they are made. Please also bear in mind that you can only make a motion to amend when you are first recognized, and not in the midst of or at the end of your remarks. In order to be fair to everyone, I will not entertain any motions to amend that do not strictly adhere to these parameters. If you wish to speak during discussions, please raise your card. Only registered voters of Sudbury, non-resident Sudbury employees, or elected state officials may speak without leave of the hall. Once I recognize you, a scout will deliver a microphone to you at your seat. When you're handed the microphone, it will already be on. Every time you address the hall, please begin by slowly and clearly stating your name and address so that the town clerk can make an accurate record of these proceedings. According to our bylaws, presenters of articles may speak for a maximum of 10 minutes and all other speakers for a maximum of 5 minutes unless additional time is granted by the hall. I have asked Patty Golden to monitor the time of all the speakers, so she'll give me a signal when your time is up. Thank you, Patty. In recognition of the fact that the cost center's presentations are unduly limited by the 10-minute rule, at 2016 annual town meeting, we adopted a more flexible approach, and I intend to continue that practice tonight when we reach Article 3. I will, at that point, suggest an appropriate motion to expand the time for the cost center presentations. So, and otherwise, I will do my best to ensure that the proceedings move along crisply, and I hope that all presenters and speakers understand that succinctness will be very much appreciated by the hall. Any motion to move the question or call the question will be taken up as any other motion made from the floor. For those of you who are new to town meeting, a motion to move the question is a request to end all debate and to move directly to a vote on the motion. I will not respond to people who simply call out, call the question. To move the question, you must be recognized by me and immediately make your motion. You cannot take the microphone, recite your opinion on an article, and then try to shut off debate. Please also understand that I have the right to rule that a motion to move the question is out of order if I believe that the motion is unfairly or prematurely limiting the voters' rights to hear answers to questions or to better understand the motion or amendment. Some notes on voting. Each article in your warrant describes the quantum of votes necessary for a motion under that article to pass. Usually it's a simple majority, but specific types of actions, such as those relating to zoning amendments or the incurrence of debt, require a two-thirds vote. Still others require a four-fifths vote of the hall. Sometimes, for a variety of possible reasons, the required quantum of a vote as set forth in the warrant may be different than the actual vote required. After consultation with town council, I will remind the hall of the requisite quantum before each vote and then ask all present to signify their votes in favor or against a motion by raising your cards. We've already practiced that part. I will then count the vote and announce the result. And this part is important for certain topics that sometimes might come in as a close vote. If a vote is too close for me to call, I will call for a counted vote. Given the substantial amount of time it takes to do a count in this manner, I ask that you not request such a procedure unless you are certain that I have miscalculated. I assure you that unless the show of hands is obvious, I will call for a counted vote myself. And lastly, a word about decorum and my power as moderator to sanction unruly conduct. I firmly believe that on almost all issues of any complexity, reasonable minds can differ. Am I out of time? Sorry. A healthy respect for both sides of an argument is essential if we are to achieve our goal of acting in the best interests of our town. It takes courage to rise in a public forum and speak one's mind. I ask that you treat every speaker tonight with courtesy and respect, no matter how strongly you may disagree with his or her point of view. To that end, I will not allow any clapping, hissing, booing, or other audible noise for or against any speakers, either before, during, or after presentations. It is within my powers as moderator to terminate the right to speak of anyone who makes disrespectful comments, whether directed at a voter, a speaker, or a town official. I now recognize the chair of the Board of Selectmen, Bob Hardy, for a State of the Town address. And just one note, this address, as well as the Finance Committee's State of the Budget presentation and capital budget presentations, are not required to adhere to any set time limit. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. The 2018 fiscal year for the town of Sudbury is a year to remember. We were challenged with a series of consecutive storms which delivered record-setting amounts of snow, ice, wind, and power outages to Sudbury. Our public safety, DPW, and other town employees, contractors, and volunteers responded to the challenge in a manner which made us all proud. We declared the first state of emergency in the town of Sudbury in recent memory. We opened our emergency shelter at the Fairbanks Center and served hundreds of residents who came in for warmth, electricity, food. Many of them got some work done during the day, and some stayed overnight until their home was ready for their return. Our town social worker, public safety personnel, and medically trained volunteers were very busy at this time conducting wellness visits on our town residents, some of them living alone into their 90s, to ensure they were safe during this storm and during the prolonged power outage. Our town manager literally worked around the clock during this period, coordinating with state emergency teams to clear our roads and address the most dangerous electrical lines and managing the emergency shelter and all the town's resources to see us through this emergency. Due to the record amount of roadside debris, which all needed to be collected, we decided to offer the opportunity to our residents to remove their storm debris as well, to prevent a prolonged residential buildup of storm debris, which would continue to block roads and sidewalks, and also to reduce a potential excessive amount of residential brush fires, which would have occurred during the burning season. We have paid all of our bills for fiscal 2018. We have over $1.7 million in unrestricted available funds. We have over $4 million in our emergency stabilization fund, and we have proposed a non-override budget for fiscal 2019. We have proposed a non-override operating budget for 9 of the last 10 years, and we have averaged $3.4 million per year in capital investments over the last 10 years, for an average of over 4% of our operating budget invested in capital investments. To give you an appreciation for how difficult that is, the business of government is very much a people business. A full 76% of our budget is made up by salary and benefits, 76%. And as we all know, because we all, every one of us in this room has salary and benefits. Those go up every year. And when your budget is comprised of 76% salary and benefits, to be able to balance that budget year over year is quite an accomplishment. Thanks to the ability of our taxpayers and the financial management of our town, we were again rated with a AAA bond rating, and Sudbury's town budget received the Excellence in Financial Reporting Award. In fiscal 2018, we continued to make progress on our most important objectives. We have begun the significant task of updating the town's policies, some of which have not been updated since the 1970s. We were awarded grants for the Green Communities, the Community Compact, the Crosstown Connect, the Senior Needs Assessment, Livable Communities, and the Loring Parsonage, which is being rehabilitated to become Sudbury's History Center and Museum. We launched the Sudbury Shuttle, which transports Sudbury residents from the Marlboro border to the Wayland border, stopping at the major residential developments, shopping centers, and restaurants. We conducted the Malone-Charette Focus Group and the online survey to help us determine the best use for that property. And after years of lobbying, we have been awarded the funding for the Landham Road intersection. We are seeing progress with the Meadowwalk development at the former Raytheon site, for which we negotiated significant mitigation funds, which are being used to benefit our town in many different areas. Whole Foods is open. Oak Barrel Tavern, Pete's Coffee, Muya Burger, and Pawnee will be opening later this summer, and some of the first residents have moved in to the Avalon development this weekend. The property will continue to be an amenity for all of our residents, a growing source of tax revenue, as well as a source of negotiated mitigation funds. We reached an important milestone of being certified with 10% of our housing stock as affordable housing, which gives us the authority to control developments in Sudbury and no longer leaves us vulnerable to 40B developers. This year, we doubled down on our efforts to preserve what we love about Sudbury, and we will continue to fight against the Eversource high-voltage intrusion into our neighborhoods, conservation land, and wetlands, and we will continue to fight against the Sudbury Station development in Sudbury's town center. We are committed to opposing these projects, which would change Sudbury, and we are taking a proactive approach to open space management and smart growth to prevent this from happening again. This past year has been a year of significant challenges, rewarding accomplishments, and ongoing progress. To the people of Sudbury, the town of Sudbury, the employees of Sudbury, I say thank you for a great year.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hardy. Okay, and that brings us to Article 2. And I believe Mr. Cardi is making the motion on that one.
Article 2, FY18 budget adjustments. Move to amend the vote taken under Article 3, FY18 budget of the 2017 annual town meeting by transferring $250,000 from account 900, employee benefits, and $65,000 from account 200, public safety, to account 400, public works, and further by transferring $35,000 from account 200, public safety, to account 100, general government.
Thank you. Is there a second? Yes, I see one. Does the Finance Committee wish to report on this?
Finance Committee unanimously supports Article 2.
And the Board of Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen unanimously support Article 2.
Thank you. And I will recognize Ms. Rodriguez for a presentation.
Good evening, Town Manager Melissa Murphy Rodriguez. Thank you. This is just a housekeeping article. It's transfers that are being made within this year's operating budget to help the town deal with unexpected or unusual expenses. So we're transferring from the benefits line item $250,000 and our public safety budget $100,000 to general government $35,000 and public works $315,000. The transfers are going to the legal department for the $35,000 and to the snow and ice account for the $315,000. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone like to comment on this motion? I see no one, so we'll move directly to a vote. The quantum of vote required for this is a majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you. Before we get to Article 3, I have a few brief notes on procedure. We will begin with a so-called limiting motion from the Finance Committee that proposes an appropriation not to exceed the amount required to fund the proposed budget. The limiting motion, if passed, will then establish the upper limit of the budget. A vote in favor of the limiting motion does not mean that town meeting has approved the particular distributions as set forth in the warrant, but rather establishes only the upper limit of the town's budget appropriation for fiscal year 2019. Once we dispose of the limiting motion, the Finance Committee will make a main motion on the budget. At that time, I will read line by line the items in the main motion. Absent a motion to reconsider the limiting motion, a voter can only make a motion to amend to reduce a line item or to increase one item and decrease another so that the total amount appropriated does not exceed the amount established by the limiting motion. In other words, it will be out of order to make a motion to increase a line item if that increase would cause the main budget figure to exceed the amount set by the limiting motion without first moving for reconsideration of the limiting motion. I now recognize Brian Semple, Chair of the Finance Committee, for the budget limiting motion.
Limiting motion, move that the amount appropriated under the fiscal year 2019 budget not exceed the sum of $98,516,637.
Thank you. Does that receive a second? It does. I'll now ask Mr. Semple to deliver the Finance Committee's statement of the town's financial condition. As was the case with Mr. Hardy's presentation on the state of the town, there's no time limit for this. Mr. Semple.
Thank you. Good evening. I'm Brian Semple, chairman of the Sudbury Finance Committee. The Finance Committee is seated behind me on the left there. We are your representatives from the town meeting body for all things finance. We're appointed by the town moderator. And we're a fully independent committee from really any of the other committees in town, including the Board of Selectmen. The committee is made up of folks that have everything from a fiscally conservative outlook to a very fiscally liberal outlook. So when you see our votes up there, if it's a 9-0 vote, it means that generally all members of the committee have aligned on it. If you see split votes, we're kind of like the Supreme Court, we're split. If you see us all opposed, it generally means that we're all opposed to it. There's probably someone on the committee that thinks and acts like you do in terms of how they vote with your finances. I'd encourage everyone to take a look at the warrant. It's got some great information in it, including the Finance Committee report starting at FS02. And then, Dennis Cohen, I got to recognize you for all the great information you added in terms of there's things in there around the collective bargaining agreements, long-term debt, and CPA funding. And I'll try to refer to that as we go through some of the sections tonight. I'm going to talk about 5 minutes to try to get you through the highlights of what's going on with the budget. All right, tonight there's several types of spending articles. We've got the operating budget that we're going to talk about now, which is close to $100 million. That includes the schools, the town, and that's where a majority of your taxes are being spent. It's about $13,000 for an average household. Later on tonight and tomorrow night, we'll be talking about capital items, CPA items, and mixed into this is a bunch of financial administrative items such as stabilization funds. The Finance Committee unanimously recommends passage of Article 3. It's a $98 million budget. The budget came in at the maximum non-override amount, meaning this is the maximum we can charge without having to go into override. And it's about a $3.7 million increase over your FY18 taxes. That represents about $262 for the average house home, which has a $726,000 valuation. It's about a 2.1 increase in your overall tax bill. The reason why it's not going up the full 2.5 is because we continue to have some debt that's getting retired. And you'll see that a little bit later on in terms of what our debt outlook looks like. So, $3.7 million. Let's dig into what's driving that increase. So this is a chart showing the increase total for the town and the amount of dollars for each of them. I'm going to start in the upper right corner. You'll notice that salary step and lane and salary COLA represent a little over $1.4 million. It's about over 30% of the budget is driven by the collective bargaining agreements that the town signs with the various unions. In addition, there's the next item, which is benefits, about $536,000 of increase. So those are the benefits, the health care benefits that all of us pay. The town is not immune to any increases in benefits, just like we are with private employers. Working over to the left is pension. You can see the OPEB contribution, special education, transportation, and then what we call new programming, which are new things the town is taking on. There's reduced programs on there, which is a negative, and as many of the Finance Committee members pointed out to me, you can't have a negative in a pie chart. That's true, you cannot, but I at least want to show you that compared to last year to this year, we're basically doing much of what we did last year. We're doing not that much, we're reducing not that much in terms of additional programs, and you can see a majority of the increase you're going towards is getting put out for salary increases due to the collective bargaining agreements. Okay? All right, so some general themes and issues is we are concerned about the contract settlements, and as they are completed, we'll be looking at them to make recommendations in the FY 20 and 21 budgets. Page FS20 in your warrant has a really good explanation of where we are with all the various contracts in town. OPEB, that's our, other pension employment benefits, other post-employment benefits. This is the rather large liability the town has. We continue to chip away at that, so we're excited to see that in this budget also. And I should also point out that in terms of the favorability of the budget, in terms of the amount of revenue coming in, we had an incremental $400,000 coming in this year from the new growth. So normally we have around $600,000 coming in from basically new construction, and this year we had almost $1 million. That is good for the budget. We can't necessarily count on that in the years going forward. All right, so quickly, town budget highlights. It's a 2.72% increase, and you'll notice in her presentation they're making minor changes of services to Park and Rec, IT, the Board of Health, Veterans, and the town clerk. Sudbury Public Schools is a 3.6% increase. Some of the larger items in there is they did some reductions in bus service. That they're restoring that, thankfully, for about $200,000. There's some restoration of special education reserves for about $500,000. There's some cautions in the Sudbury Public School budget in that they have not yet settled their contracts. So if there's any cost of living increases that come about because of those contracts, they'll have to be somehow funded within the school budget. The schools have the ability to move money around within their budget that the town does not necessarily have. Lincoln Sudbury is a 4.53% increase to the town. They're adding some additional STEM spending and teachers there. There was an issue with Parking Lot Enterprise Fund was funding a full-time employee in the, I believe, the grounds area. That's being corrected, and the Finance Committee is going to look more into how these funds are used. There's a 10% increase in benefits. So the town is around 5% GIC. This is the first time LS has been higher than the town, around 10%, and they're working on that. And you can see they recently settled contracts for FY19 at 2.6%, 3.9% and 4.4% in terms of the impact on the salary line items for the town. Now, the LS had to dip into their LS to their E&D funds, which essentially is their equivalent of free cash, of about $250,000. We're generally not in favor of doing the E&D, of doing this, but they're working on getting some insurance savings to offset that. I should also note that all the numbers I give up here are, I don't know, they're Finance Committee numbers, they're approximations. The warrant is always going to be the platform of record in terms of what the exact numbers are. All right, so what's next? So we've begun a three-year forecast for FY20, FY21. From what we can tell, the next 2 years have similar cost structure increases. The limiting motion that you're going to do after the budget presentations, you basically are increasing your taxes. So if you don't want to increase your taxes, you need to vote against the limiting motion and or figure out why you won't. The limiting motion gives us the ability to raise the budget, and then they'll do the allocations after that. I'll be back later for a capital and CPA presentation, and then after town meeting, we'll look at the settled contracts for the FY20 budget. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Semple. Does the Board of Selectmen wish to be heard on the limiting motion?
The Board of Selectmen unanimously support.
Okay. I will now recognize representatives of each of the cost centers to explain their positions on the budget. Town Manager Melissa Rodriguez will speak for the town, Superintendent Ann Wilson for Sudbury Public Schools, and Superintendent Bella Wong for Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School. As you may know, Article 2, Section 11 of the bylaw provides that the initial presentation of the proponents of an article may not exceed 10 minutes in length unless consent is given by a majority of the hall. In the past, the hall has recognized the inherent difficulties associated with having three cost centers present within a 10-minute time frame and has authorized each administrator to speak for 5 minutes total, for a total of 15. However, given the importance and complexity of this information and the fact that many residents are hearing and digesting it for the first time, many have suggested that 5 minutes per cost center is simply insufficient. And I agree, and so I would ask the hall for a motion to allow each cost center a total of 8 minutes for an overall presentation of 24. May I have such a motion? Thank you. Is there a second? Thank you. This requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. Any opposed? That passes unanimously. I will recognize Ms. Rodriguez for the first presentation.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. This year, the town was proud to submit a budget document that meets the requirements for the Distinguished Budget Presentation Award. You can find that budget on our town website. It's a very transparent, easy-to-read budget document that includes not only the recommended budget, but a lot of information about the town, how we set a budget, the town's goals, and also our three-year forecasting. This is a look at what our balanced budget would look like with revenue. So there's four, five types of revenues that we bring in. One is taxes through both real estate and property. Personal property. The second one is intergovernmental revenue, which is local aid, the money that we receive through the state. The third one is local receipts, and that's things like your excise tax bills. Other available is actually our ambulance receipts, and then in some years we use free cash, typically not for operating, but to offset capital within the budget this year. You're seeing a 3.7% increase in the budget, and that and in revenues as well, and that includes Proposition 2.5 and new growth. As the chair said, new growth is estimated to be approximately $1 million this year, although it is historically more like $600,000. And unless we see more large developments like Meadowwalk, we will return to the $600,000 point again around FY20. It should be noted these numbers are actually slightly less than we projected during our forecasting session, but these budgets are constantly in flux until we get here to you. This is just a breakdown of the FY19 budget by department, including the schools. It also includes our town debt service, as well as the operating capital, which we'll talk about in Article 4. This graph shows the town's budget breakdown. And as you can see, the majority of our funds actually goes to our employee benefits. The 34% shown on this graph represents both SPS and the town's benefits. The town portion is $5,358,834, and the school part is $6,972,337, just under a 4.5% increase. The debt shown here at 10% also includes the debt that is from the Sudbury Public Schools as well. As you can see, the biggest department that we have is public safety. And it should be noted that benefits don't just include health care benefits. They also include many other things like our pension and also our liability insurance, building insurance, et cetera. There's no changes in headcount throughout this budget. We have the same number of employees that we had last year. These budgets include all of our already bargained for increases as well as step increases if the employee is eligible for a step increase. The majority of our budgets are level funded with some budgets seeing small critical changes. I'm going to run quickly through those changes for you. The law department is seeing a $17,000 increase for increased contracts and increased hours for labor counsel due to the fact that we're in a negotiation year with all of our contracts. The assessing department is seeing a $2,000 contractual increase for Patriot Properties. The IT department is seeing $23,000 in increase in software, and the majority of that software is firewall software, threat prevention, and data security, very important for us, and since we have everyone's data, important for everyone in the town as well. The town clerk is seeing a $20,000 increase, and that's due to us having a state election this year, as well as implementation of early voting. The trees and cemetery department is seeing a $3,000 increase for a tree contract. Parks and grounds is seeing a $20,000 increase because we're going to be aerating and slice seeding the fields 2 times per year to improve conditions. Don't ask me what that means. The Board of Health is seeing a $21,000 increase for contracted services, and that is to both implement the bottle and bag bill as well as additional food and milk that is necessary for our new developments. The Council on Aging is seeing a $4,000 increase to their general expense line item. They saw a cut when we had some cuts in fiscal year 17, and that one is being restored this year. The Veterans Affairs Office is seeing a $20,000 increase to veterans benefits. That meets our current level of need. We had to do a reserve transfer this year in order to meet need, and we are reimbursed 75% by the state. The Goodnow Library is seeing a $13,485 contractual increase for automation. That's the Minuteman network that allows us to borrow books from all different libraries, and an $8,000 increase for books and materials. In order to be eligible for state aid and reach our library certification, the books and materials must be 15% of the budget, so that $8,000 brings us to that threshold. And OPEB is seeing a $70,000 increase with an 11-year plan in place to bring us to our required amount. And again, we're not seeing any increase in headcount this year. You can see that last year we came to 175 through the goodwill of the town, giving us 4 new firefighters and 1 new police officer, which we greatly appreciate, and we've maintained that number this year. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before we move on to the next presentation, it has come to my attention that someone is circulating nomination papers in the hall, and I believe that's pretty distracting to the voters. So I would just ask whoever's doing that to take the papers and put them away, or I think it would be all right to do it in the lobby before people check in, but I would ask that it not occur in the hall during town meeting. Thank you. Okay, I will now recognize Dr. Ann Wilson for Sudbury Public Schools' presentation.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Sudbury Public Schools' vision expresses a focus on excellence in education, attending to academic as well as social-emotional growth for all students. Our vision is exemplified and implemented through a theory of action as well as educational and operational goals and objectives. Our theory of action is a causal statement indicating that if we provide high-quality instruction, a safe environment, both physical and emotional, professional development, and if we use data to inform our decisions, then we will challenge all learners, our capacity as educators will grow and evolve, and achievement gaps will narrow. Sudbury Public Schools has engaged in a strategic planning process, the result of which led to the school committee approval of the following overarching goals. Educational goals include promoting social, emotional, and physical wellness, implementing innovative research-based curriculum and educational practices, and providing learning experiences that challenge all learners according to their individual needs. The plan also includes operational goals around employing, developing, and supporting high-quality personnel and developing fiscally responsible budgets that reflect our vision and our theory of action. Our budget drivers include enrollment and staffing related to our enrollment, special education, including in-district and out-of-district programming and specialized transportation, and general education transportation. Challenges for the fiscal year 19 budget in particular include certain identified district needs are not able to be met within this budget. We'll continue to feel the impact of staffing cuts made last year, despite an override that we very much appreciated from the town, that prevented us from making additional cuts of staffing and resources. Collective bargaining is still in process, and there is a transition to a new superintendent since I am retiring. This is our projected enrollment for the next 10 years. You can see that our enrollment is projected to be fairly flat with minor decreases over the next few years and then an uptick beginning in fiscal year 23. That would be indicated by 2022 on this graph. Annually, we have a demographic study done that takes into account all of the real estate movement within the town, as well as new developments. This graph shows per pupil expenditures for fiscal year 17, which is the latest data that's available on the Department of Ed website, and some of our comparison districts. Dover, Lincoln, Carlisle, Concord, Southborough, Sherbourne, Boxford, and Northborough are pre-K to 6 or pre-K to 8 districts, just for your information. And just so that you know that approximately one half of our professional staff is at the top step of our pay scale. As you'll see, that's a very important thing to know as you're looking at comparisons. This is a graph of our expenses and how they break out, and similar to the town, but with a much larger percentage of our budget being dedicated to salary and benefits. 83.5% of our budget cost covers salaries and benefits, while approximately 16.5% covers a variety of other costs, which individually account for less than 4% of the overall budget within that category. This is a summary of our operating budget, showing that the bottom line is aligned with the town manager's recommended 3.6% overall increase. You will notice that expenses increased by 13.5%, totaling $909,197. This includes an out-of-district tuition increase of $556,652, an increase in general ed transportation of $204,323, a maintenance increase of $16,063, a utilities increase of $57,135, and increases to other non-salary lines of $75,023. Not included in this budget, restorations and needs based on staffing cuts from last year, Walker Report recommendations that we had started to implement related to our special education programming and oversight. This was an independent report that evaluated our programming and our staffing and made some specific recommendations. And there are no new initiatives or programs in the budget. This does not mean that we will not continue on our path of excellence in education. It does not mean that we will not continue implementing the standards and our new curriculum. All of that will continue. Finally, I'd like to say that we're very proud of our schools and our students and our performance. Sudbury educators are committed to providing the excellent education that our students deserve and that we are accustomed to here in Sudbury, and we truly appreciate your support for our exceptional schools. On a personal note, I thank you for the opportunity to work with you over the past 7 years. It has been an honor to serve the students of Sudbury and work with an exceptional, caring team. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Wilson. I now recognize Ms. Bella Wong for the Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. It's my pleasure to present to you the proposed budget for Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School for FY19. Every budget represents our core values and support for our school goals for improvement. Our core values, fostering cooperative and caring relationships, respecting human differences, pursuing academic excellence, and cultivating community. Our school goals for improvement, what students should be able to do by the time they graduate, access to equity and excellence for all students, ensuring social emotional supports for students and staff, and then this year, focusing on cultivating community. It supports our capacity to recruit and retain high-quality faculty and staff. The heart of our school is what happens in the classroom. And it supports an education program that fosters student growth for postgraduate success. Everything that we do is with an eye of what our students will be able to do when they leave our school. This is the FY19 budget overview. It incorporates new teacher compensation agreement. We were able to successfully negotiate the contract before in the fall. It maintains our current educational program, no changes, everything is there. It partially restores instructional capital budget that was reduced in FY18. We were carrying $150,000 in the instructional capital. It pays for the computers, equipment that is used directly in the classroom. We're restoring it to $75,000 for FY19. Reallocation and increase of FTE to balance class size. And it addresses and satisfies our Lincoln budget guidance and addresses and satisfies our Sudbury budget guidance. These are more detailed description of the financial assumptions. The newly negotiated agreements for compensation for the next 3 years starting this July 1. The teachers agreed to split their COLA with a mid-year increase for the next 3 years. 6.5% changes the COLA base over the next 3 years, but 4.5% cash-wise over the next 3 years. There is a 0.58 FTE net increase to staffing to science, math, and instructional technology support for a net cost around $35,000. Our federal grants are level funded. Our state grants reflect the governor's budget that was released in January 2018. We are reducing our anticipated state circuit breaker reimbursement. For the current year, we assumed receiving $1.654 million, but in fact are receiving $1.3. Next year, we're adjusting our assumption to $1.5 million. This budget assumes a 10% increase to health insurance, 6.8% increase to non-MTRS pension funding. That's pension funding for everyone in the building that is not a teacher or administrator. 5% increase in regular education transportation. Again, the partial restoration of funding for instructional capital. 2% increase to expenses across the board. It increases our annual contribution to fund the OPEB accrued liability by $24,402, and there is no adjustment to the student fee structure. I should also say that we are level funding our expenses toward utilities, and our regional transportation is also level funded. Our projected enrollment over the next 5 years is fairly level. So this year we received 1,529 students in district. We were expecting 1,515, so we received more students than we projected for the current year. Next year we are projected to receive 1,535, so a slight increase, but it essentially level for the next couple of years. These are the proposed adjustments to the educational program that nets a 0.58 FTE increase. We reduced 0.17 in wellness. We're adding one section to science, one section to math, and then adding a 0.25 FTE increase to our instructional technology support. This is to satisfy the needs of our high class size in science and math. And instructional technology. The DESE guideline for IT support is 1.0 FTE per 60 to 120 instructional staff. We currently have a 0.75 FTE for 150 instructional staff. So this will bring us up to 1.0, which is still below the guideline. I wanted to bring some highlight on our OPEB funding history. The Lincoln-Sudbury School District started funding its OPEB liability in FY16 in the amount stated on the screen. FY17, we increased the annual contribution to $238,114, and in the current year, we increase the annual contribution even more. So when I state that we are increasing the annual contribution to the OPEB liability by $24,402, it means that in FY19, we will be contributing $383,109 to fund the OPEB liability. The total contribution to date is $734,984 plus the amount that's in the budget for FY19. It would be a total of $1,118,093 plus the interest at the end of the current year. It's over a 34% increase in 1 year. This is thank you to the Sudbury Town Manager's Office and analysis and recommendation. Following this outline projection of incremental increases will culminate in fully funding the ARC by FY29, essentially funding the liability in its totality. FY19, the recommended amount was $370,414, but we are carrying $383,109 in the budget for FY19. This will satisfy the amount that's requested of us to fund for FY20. This is the recommended FY19 budget for Lincoln-Sudbury High School. FY18 number, $30,764,174. This is the appropriated amount. appropriated amount, including debt and OPEB funding. In FY19, the appropriation being sought is $32,105,742 for a difference of $1,341,572. That represents a 4.36% increase over FY18 in the appropriated budget. Sudbury guidance for us was 3.6%. $1,091,572 represents 3.55%.
Are you almost finished?
Yes.
Okay.
2 minutes?
2 minutes is fine if they're quick.
Okay. $250,000 is coming from excess and deficiency fund, as Mr. Sample stated earlier. Our E&D is projected to be $1.1 million, so minus $250,000 would leave us to be $850,000. I think that was the last, actually. This is, that was the budget in its totality, and then just to the assessment. The assessment is the total amount each town is charged for, and this is the calculation of the assessment. It's the minimum contribution established by the state, and then number two is the apportionment ratio dictated by the regional agreement between the two towns. The net assessment ratio will be 87.05% for Sudbury and 12.95% for Lincoln. These are preliminary numbers until the budget is voted in July. And these are the assessments for the two towns. For Sudbury, it will be $24,762,715, and Lincoln, $3,684,359. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And now I will open it up for anyone who would like to be heard on the limiting motion. And if you would like to be recognized, please raise your hand with your card so that I can see it. I am not seeing any hands for discussion on the limiting motion. So we will proceed to a vote. All in favor, and this needs to be a majority vote for this limiting motion. Those in favor, please signify by raising your cards. Thank you. Those opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Having established the upper limit of the budget, I will now ask Mr. Semple to make a motion regarding the proposed expenditures. Mr. Semple.
Move that the town appropriate the sum of money set forth in the column FY19 recommended for fiscal year 2019 as printed in the warrant. Said sums to be raised by taxation, except that the following items to be raised and designated by transfer from available fund balances and interfund transfers. From Inland Reserve for Appropriation Account to 200, Public Safety.
Hang on. I'm sorry to interrupt, Mr. Semple. The slides are not. Oh. Okay. The slides have caught up. I just want to make sure people are.
Slides need to keep up with me.
The slides can't keep up with you. Okay, continue. Thank you.
Public safety, $660,000, and to authorize the town manager to transfer $1,282,986 of the funds from item 900, employee benefits, town and SBS, and $540,249 from item 1,000, OPEB trust contribution, town and SBS, to the OPEB trust established to meet expenses for post-employment health and life insurance benefits for eligible retirees and to expand such funds for that purpose. And to authorize multi-year contracts in excess of 3 years, either by renewal, extension, or purchase options in accordance with the provisions of Massachusetts General Laws, Chapter 30B, Section 12, upon determination by the Chief Procurement Officer to be the most advantageous option.
Thank you very much. Does that receive a second? It does. Thank you. Does the Finance Committee wish to be heard on the main motion under Article 3?
No.
Does the Board of Selectmen wish to be heard?
The Board of Selectmen unanimously support.
Thank you. I will now read each line of the proposed budget and ask if anyone has a motion to amend. Remember, because town meeting has enacted the limiting motion, any motion to increase a line item must include a provision to decrease another line item in the same amount, unless a voter first makes a motion to reconsider the limiting motion. Please note that there's a wealth of detail and information regarding each of these line items in the Finance Committee report in your warrant that begins immediately after page 31. And as I read these line items, if you have a question or a motion to amend, please stand and wait to be recognized. Sir, I see your hand in the back. Do you have a point of order? You would like to be able to see slide number 3 of the 4? Sure. And the numbers I'm going to read are also printed in your warrant. Thank you. Okay, so I don't know if I finished my sentence about if you do want to be recognized with a motion to amend, you need to wave your hand, or if you have a question as I go line by line. Thank you. Line 300, education, Sudbury Public Schools. Line 300, education, Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School. Line 300, education, vocational. Line 100, general government. Line 200, public safety. Line 400, public works. Line 500, human services. Line 600, culture and recreation. Line 800, townwide operating and transfers. Line 700, town debt service. Line 900, employee benefits, town and SPS. Line 1000, OPEB trust contribution, town and SPS. Okay. Does anyone wish to be heard on the main motion under Article 3? Okay, I see no one, so we will move on to the vote. A majority is required for this to pass. All in favor of the main motion under Article 3, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Thank you. And just one note, as we're between articles, that I can only count your vote if you have a seat in the hall. So there are plenty of seats. Anyone standing is encouraged to find one. Otherwise, I cannot count your vote. Thank you. Okay, moving on to Article 4. I will recognize Susan Giuliano for the motion.
Move to appropriate the sum of $821,318 for the purchase or acquisition of capital items, including but not limited to capital equipment, construction, engineering, design, and renovation to buildings, with the sum of $392,996 to be transferred from free cash, and the sum of $428,322 to be raised by taxation, and to authorize the town manager to allocate funds as needed between the underlying departments, as shown in the following chart and on the screen.
Thank you. Is there a second? Thank you. And I'll recognize Ms. Rodriguez for a presentation.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. The FY19 Town Manager's Capital Expenditures Budget was developed and recommended to the town managers by staff. It encompasses projects from all three cost centers, and this year is uniquely increasing by $408,128 to $821,318. The proposal is to fund a portion of this budget with free cash, $428,322, and the rest from the tax levy. In the past, we had budgeted just about $400,000 from the tax levy. This budget includes items that are less than $50,000 in 1 year or less than $100,000 over multiple years. This is a breakdown of the different departments and the amount of funding that they're getting. So SBS is budgeted at $102,000, LS at $97,818, and the remaining money is all for town projects. This is a quick run through the projects. So we have walkway construction at $50,000, culvert replacement at $30,000, various site improvements at parks and grounds at $50,000, various building improvements at $50,000, interior painting of schools and painting at the Goodnell Library at $50,000, portable radios for the police department at $25,600, townwide permitting software at $40,900, security upgrades at LS at $47,822, a hot water heater at LS at $49,996, a second well at Haskell Field at $45,000, an SBS space study at $50,000, the school's cafeteria kitchen equipment at $39,000, a maintenance equipment for school custodians at $38,000, paging clocks and bell systems at the Sudbury Public Schools at $25,000, the septic pumps at the Curtis School at $40,000, new voting boxes at $50,000, digitalization of documents at $50,000, a new air compressor at DPW at $20,000, a sidewalk roller at $20,000, and two lawnmowers at $25,000 each. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And does the Finance Committee, yes, I know, in fact, that the Finance Committee would like to be heard, and I'll recognize Brian Semple for a report.
So the Article 3, we spent the $98 million. This is the beginning of another $6.1 million of spending during the town meeting. So the spending that you're going to be asked to do tonight and tomorrow night is really composed into three buckets. There's three debt items, there's a bunch of free cash items, and there's CPA spending. You'll notice Article 4 under the free cash items is what we're talking about right now. It's about $1.6 million of free cash. So why do you care about this? A couple reasons. So your tax bill gets driven up and down by a variety of factors. So one is, working from the top to bottom, is the increase in the operating budget. That's what we just did with Article 3. That's what's going to push it up by about the $265 or so. In addition, if we pass the debt and capital exclusions tonight for some of the DPW equipment, that will also push your tax bill up. Things that will not change your tax bill, but it's still your money, is anything that we're spending from free cash. So free cash is money that the And this is my simplified explanation. It's essentially money that's in the town's checkbook at the end of last year. We're basically spending that on some of the assets. So any money from free cash doesn't affect your tax bill, but essentially still is your money. It just, we already have it on hand. And of course, the CPA articles don't affect your tax bill because that money's also already been collected. And in some cases, there is a state match. Things that will reduce your tax bill are things like the expiration of the capital overrides from prior years, and also any reduction in long-term debt, and you'll see that shortly. And, of course, your assessment's going to vary based on the circumstances around your house. So with that, let's just quickly go through each of the buckets for the town meeting. So free cash, there's $1.7 million available. The Finance Committee is comfortable with this spending up here down to about the 0.5% reserve. You'll notice there's only one item on there, item 28, cutting field, that the Finance Committee is opposed to, and that's because it violates the principle of getting to the 0.5% reserve. We'll talk about that when that comes up for a vote. The second group of spending are the debt exclusions, and those are Articles 22, 23, and 24. This primary source here will be bonds. We looked at this at the fall town meeting. We could raise another $40 million easy as a town, and our debt service would just be equal to, say, Concord. So we have plenty of borrowing capacity left to go raise debt. You'll see the amounts up there for the debt that we're looking at tonight. There is one typo on there. The Stearns Mill Pond Dam Dutton Road Project is $420. It's $20 times $22 per year, or $22 over 20 years. When you look at the capital projects, one of the things we considered are the other capital projects that are on the horizon. This came out of the town report. This is what the five-year capital plan looks like. It's a plan. We have to approve all of this. The large green bar there is Fire Station 2, the Community Center, and Town Hall. If you pull out the new substantial renovations, which is green, this is what the capital plan looks like. There's about $21.3 million in urgent maintenance and risk mitigation maintenance due over the next 5 years. You can look at that as being roughly $4 million a year. You'll notice we're spending a couple millions of dollars of that tonight. In addition, FY21, FY22, looking ahead, you'll see that yellow box there, is that our debt service drops from about $3 million a year down to about $1 million. That's a substantial drop of about $2 million, and that's primarily due to the first column there, which is the retirement of school debt from the school building programs that we did earlier. Next source of funding is CPA. CPA is 3% of the tax levy. You can see the CPA articles up there. The state match was only about 11% last year. The CPA has $4.2 million on hand, but due to the incoming cash flow, we can only raise about another $2.4 million in debt. So when you see other large capital projects out there, land purchases we want to make, there's not significant capacity left in the CPA, but you can also notice we're not spending that much money on the CPA over the town meeting. And there's two other funding sources, which is the stabilization fund, which sits at $5 million. We're not tapping that at all, and we're not doing any capital exclusions for 1 year tonight. So that is a summary of all the spending articles. At each spending article, we'll tell you how much the impact will be, how much money you're spending, and also what the impact will be on your tax bill. So with that, the Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 4, 7-0. You're spending about $35, but the impact on your tax bill is zero since the source is free cash.
Great, thank you. Does the Board of Selectmen wish to report on this?
The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports the Article 4 capital budget.
Thank you. Would anyone like to be heard on Article 4? Yes, sir, in the middle on the right.
Hank Surrett, Longfellow Road. I have serious reservation about incurring additional capital debt at this time in large part because of the federal tax law. Is every dollar we raise our taxes is, in fact, raising them by about a dollar and a half to the extent we can no longer get deductions against our federal taxes. So I think we should be scaling back, not incurring more debt at this point, at least until that federal tax law is resolved.
Thank you for your comment. Would anyone else like to be heard? I see no one. So we will move on to a vote. The quantum of vote required for this is a majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Thank you. And moving to Article 5, I recognize Mr. Simon for a motion.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Article 5, Fiscal Year 19, Transfer Station Enterprise Fund Budget. Move to appropriate the sum of $310,806 for the Transfer Station Enterprise Fund for Fiscal Year 19, and further to authorize the use of an additional $16,700 of Enterprise Fund receipts for indirect costs, such sums to be raised by $327,506 in receipts of the enterprise.
Thank you. Is there a second? Thank you. And I will recognize Ms. Rodriguez for a presentation.
Thank you. So the next three budgets that we'll be presenting, the next three articles, are all enterprise fund budgets. An enterprise fund budget is a different way of accounting for our financial activities, and basically is a budget that is entirely funded by user fees. So it is not a fee that is put on our taxes, but instead the individual who's actually using the service pays for the service. And these funds are segregated into a different account with different financial statements from all of our other activities. The first one we're discussing tonight is the Transfer Station Enterprise Fund budget. It is seeing a slight increase of $13,000. All the employees of the transfer station are included. It includes all of our indirect costs, which is things like benefits and health insurance, et cetera. And there will be no rate increase necessary this year. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Does the Finance Committee wish to speak?
Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 5.
Thank you. And the Board of Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Thank you. Would anyone like to be heard on Article 5? I see no one. This requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you. And Article 6, I recognize Selectwoman Brown for the motion.
Move to appropriate the sum of $467,220 for the Pool Enterprise Fund for FY19, and further to authorize use of an additional $36,227 of Enterprise Fund receipts for indirect costs, such sum to be raised from $503,447 in receipts of the enterprise.
Thank you. Is there a second? Thank you very much. And Ms. Rodriguez?
Thank you. This is the Pool Enterprise Fund. It covers all of the expenditures to run, operate, and staff the pool. This budget is actually decreasing from $574,434 to $503,447. It is also including indirect costs for the first time. Thank you.
Thank you. And the Board of Selectmen, would you like to report?
The Board of Selectmen unanimously support this article.
Thank you. And I and the Finance Committee?
Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 6.
Thank you. Anyone in the hall wish to be heard? Yes, sir, in the blue shirt. I'm sorry. Could you wait for a microphone, please? Thank you. And if you could stand as well, thank you.
Arthur Houston, 578 Peckham Road. I'm just wondering, you said that the costs are decreasing, and we are used to hearing about costs increasing. So if you could give us some details as to why the decrease and where it comes from.
Sure. So revenues for the pool have decreased over the last year, meaning that we need to make decreases. As we said earlier, the pool is funded entirely by its rates and by the revenues that it takes in. So we've actually eliminated a position.
Okay. Anyone else? I don't see anyone. This requires a majority to pass. So all in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Article 7, I recognize Selectman Carty for a motion.
Thank you. Move to appropriate the sum of $217,291 for the Recreational Field Maintenance Enterprise Fund for FY19 and to authorize use of an additional $22,575 of Enterprise Fund receipts for indirect costs, such sums to be raised from $239,866 in receipts of the enterprise.
Thank you. Is there a second? Thank you. And Ms. Rodriguez?
So this budget is also decreasing. We're going from $240,337,000 to $239,866. It includes half of the employees and the park and rec department, or field department, and half of the benefits for those employees. Everything else in this budget is maintenance, and this budget is decreasing because we had employee attrition and brought an employee in at a lower rate. Thank you.
Thank you. Finance Committee?
Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 8.
And the Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen unanimously support Article 7.
Thank you. Anyone wish to be heard on Article 7? I see no one. This requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Article 8, I recognize Selectman Hardy for a motion.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $230,607 to be transferred from free cash to account 400 snow and ice.
Thank you. Is there a second? Thank you. Ms. Rodriguez?
Thank you. a little PTSD here, but under Massachusetts general law, the snow and ice account is the only account the town can spend into a deficit, meaning we can go into the red. Each year, we budget approximately $425,000 and need to adjust accordingly based on the season. There we go. This year, we had 26 weather events. Some were just treating the roads for ice, but some of them were obviously more significant. Our total deficit is $545,606.88 as of May 1st, with $192,000 in overtime, $278,156 in materials, and $75,044 in contractors. The total we spent on snow and ice operations this year was $970,356.88. This might be dead. Now the next one. Having technical difficulties here. No, there's one more. We have to go back one more. Third one. There it is. We're requesting $230,607 from free cash. The remainder is being operated funded within the operating budget, as was requested in Article 2. Just to give you a little bit of history, in fiscal year 17, we spent approximately $895,000 on snow and ice. In fiscal year 16, which is barely a memory, we spent $552,117. Thank you.
Thank you. The Finance Committee?
Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 8.
And the Board of Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen unanimously support the article.
Great. Does anyone wish to be heard on Article 8? Yes.
Martha Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I like these behind you, which tell us where we can look at what the numbers are. And I, according to my notes, the free cash to snow and ice was $255,607. But now they say it's $230,237. And I, you know, that I only know what I copied from the view graph. And that doesn't sound right to me, that there's a discrepancy, and I don't know what the discrepancy is.
Okay, I will ask Ms. Rodriguez to explain, please.
Sure. So the amount that we're requesting is $230,607. The total amount that we spent on snow and ice was $970,356. We were able to fund approximately $425,000 out of our regular operating budget, and then we funded another portion of this through Article 2 when we did the budget adjustments. So the only amount that we're asking for through this item is $230,607 from free cash.
Thank you. I'm sorry, on stage. Yes, Mr. Semple.
I should have added the cost to the average household is $37, but there is no impact on your tax bill because it's free cash.
Thank you. Anyone else on Article 8? I don't see anyone, so we will move to a vote. A majority is required for this. All in favor, please raise your card. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Moving on to Article 9, unpaid bills. A motion by Ms. Zuliano.
Move to indefinitely postpone Article 9.
Is there a second? Thank you. And Finance Committee?
Finance Committee supports indefinite postponement of Article 9.
Selectmen?
Selectmen unanimously supports indefinite postponement of Article 9. There are no unpaid bills.
Does anyone want to talk about the lack of unpaid bills? Okay. Then we can move to a vote. This is a 4/5. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make light. Yes. I'm sorry. Yes. Thank you, everyone, for helping
me.
Hi,
Elaine Barnard-Goldstein, 40 Indian Ridge Road. We just heard that the snow removal was much more expensive than we had budgeted, and now we hear there are no unpaid bills. Could somebody please explain that?
Sure. I'm trying to think who the best person would be, perhaps.
These are just unpaid bills from last fiscal year, not this year.
Could you say that into a microphone, please?
Can you hear me? Sorry. These are unpaid bills from last fiscal year, not this fiscal year. So in order to pay bills from a past fiscal year...
Okay. Maybe pick it up and pull it closer to yourself.
How's that? Good? All right. These are unpaid bills from last fiscal year, not this fiscal year. So in order for us to pay unpaid bills that fall in a different fiscal year, we need the permission of town meeting. Fortunately, we do not have any of those bills.
Great. Anyone else have a question? Thank you. Then we will go to a vote. The required quantum for this is 4/5. No, it's not at all, because it's indefinite postponement. It's 2/3. Am I correct? Majority? I need to study my town meeting time book more thoroughly, clearly. Okay, simple majority. All in favor? Okay, any opposed? No. We will move on. Okay, and this brings us to the consent calendar articles of the warrant. Oh, I'm sorry. The clerk is keeping me straight here. I did not declare the result. It passed by well more than a majority. Thank you. This is why we have such excellent staff people, because the volunteers don't always get it right. Okay, so the consent calendar articles are numbers 10 and 11 in your warrant. Does anyone wish to hold either of these articles for discussion? I see no one. I will now entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar articles as printed in the warrant. May I have someone say so moved? Thank you. Is there a second? Okay. This vote has to be unanimous, I believe. For the consent calendar items, unanimous to put them on? No, to put them on the, to pass them. Why did I have that? It's just a majority? Huh. I stand corrected. It's a simple majority. So all in favor of the consent calendar, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you. Okay, Article 12. Motion by Selectman Hardy.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $115,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Thank you. Is there a second? Thank you. And a presentation by Ms. Rodriguez.
Thank you. As of April, the town had spent $769,000 in litigation costs related to Eversource. This includes the siting board process and aspects of the land court case versus the MBTA. Our current status is that we're waiting for a decision in the siting board case and an active litigation with the MBTA. Today, we are requesting $115,000 from free cash to continue to fund the cost of litigation with Eversource, including any necessary appeals to the Supreme Judicial Court resulting from the siting board decision. Last April, Eversource filed a petition with the Energy Facility Siting Board to install a power line in Sudbury. The filing included a preferred project underground along the MBTA right-of-way, a notice variation above ground along the MBTA right-of-way, and a geographically diverse alternative that was an underground street option. The town filed to intervene at the siting board and put on a full case, briefs for due in March, and now we are waiting for a decision. Again, we are asking for $115,000 from free cash. Thank you.
Thank you. Does the Finance Committee wish to...
Finance Committee recommends approval of Article 12 on a vote of 7-0. You're spending $17 of your money. However, there is no impact on your tax bill because it's free cash.
And the Board of Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen supports this article by a vote of 3-0 with 2 abstentions.
Thank you. And I'll see, now see if there's anyone who wishes to be heard on Article 12. I'll start on the right side, right next to the microphone. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. On this article and the next one, can we have an assessment from the town, the selectmen, or the town council, or wherever, on what we're going to end up spending for this and what the probability is that we're going to win? Because it's not at all clear to me that we're not just throwing money at a hopeless cause. Now, maybe I'm wrong. I guess I'd like to be wrong. But I have not seen the usual caution applied to this particular expenditure that is applied to most of what we spend in the course of a town meeting.
Thank you for your comment. I'm not going to put people on the spot to predict things that are completely unpredictable, but if anyone would care to perhaps summarize where we are in the legal proceedings to date, that's probably the best we can do.
So to date, we have spent, as of April, $769,000. This last $115,000 is budgeted to take us through the entire appeal of the Supreme Judicial Court. So that SJC appeal would happen if we got a negative determination at the siting board. We think we'll be getting a cited per decision sometime over the summer. So the total amount that the budget is at this point to get us through the end of the case is the $769 plus the $115, so approximately $900,000.
Thank you. And Selectman Hardy, I saw you raise your hand.
Yeah, I would just add, so the money we're approving here, it gets us through the appeals process. So we're getting towards the end of this process. There's going to be an appeals process either way. If we prevail at the siting board, Eversource is very likely to appeal. So we are going to have to litigate that appeal. If we prevail at the siting board, it's likely that Eversource would appear, or if Eversource does prevail at the siting board, then we would appeal that, of course, and take us through the appellate process. So that's where we are in the process, and the funding takes us through that.
Great. Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard? Yes, sir. Wait, I'm sorry. Wait for the microphone, please.
Voice is big enough without it. Hexer at Longfellow Road. I want to follow up on Mr. Coe's question because we have not had an assessment of the likelihood of success of this litigation or the next. And I understand the perils of commenting on litigation in open town meeting, but I'd like to know that we're not tilting windmills and that we have a reasonable likelihood of success if we spend the money that's asked of us.
Well, I don't think anyone can predict that, and I wouldn't put town council in a position to do that unless he really wants to. Okay. No, and I don't mean to make light of it. It is an impossibility to predict, as with all legal proceedings, and so I think we will move on. Selectman Hardy.
Yeah, I would just add, Hank, that we have recently seen favorable decisions in both New Hampshire and New Jersey that went against the utility companies that the siting board equivalents in those two states, New Hampshire and New Jersey, decided in favor of the public and the residents and the environment and chose against the utility and told them that they had to go along an existing path and not create a new trail. So, two is perhaps a trend. Maybe we'll see the same in Massachusetts. As you know, we can't predict what a court is going to decide, but we have reasons to feel somewhat optimistic that this may have a positive outcome.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, sir, in that same area.
Nick Pernice, 255 Peckham Road. I think that if we don't fund our attorneys, we will most certainly lose wherever we end up. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, on the other side of the room here.
Elaine Barnard Goldstein, 40 Indian Ridge Road. Personally, I'm sick of paying the lawyers. And when I hear that litigation is going to go on, and if we don't get our way, we're going to appeal, I don't like it, and I'm going to vote against.
Thank you for your comment. Yes, sir, in the same area.
Bill Chanella, 37 Jarman Road. I'd like to commend the town for a brilliant case deciding board thus far, technical and legal arguments. and also to comment on the next phase of the process. So the appeals process at the Supreme Judicial Court is described to me, a member of Protect Sudbury, as one where a body looks much more at the reasonableness of the project and would be very much more in a position to say this is not commensurate with the damage that it would cause, the reliability issue that it is alleged to address, which Eversource has reduced three times in about 3 weeks at the siting board, is evaporating, and the environment is worth saving. I understand the chair of the FinCom said this is about a $17 cost for the next year for the average taxpayer, which is about $1.50 a month. And the money that you already spent at the siting board is what built the technical and legal case that basically will be presented on appeal when that phase happens. So this is basically, you know, backing up the money that you've already spent. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? I don't see anyone. So the quantum of vote for this is a majority. So all in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Thank you. Article 13, a motion by Selectwoman Brown.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $125,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? Thank you. And a presentation by Ms. Rodriguez. If people could please be quiet as you leave the hall, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. So I actually found an error in my slide, so I'll let you know when I get there. But we are not only involved in the Housing Appeals Committee for Sudbury Station, but in also multiple litigations in land court. The land court litigation is currently on appeal. The Housing Appeals Committee is just getting started, with hearings slated to begin in late summer. As we all know, the Sudbury Station case is a case against a developer who is planning a 40B development in town center. That's the land court case. The housing appeals case is actually the town defending itself at the Housing Appeals Commission, where the Housing Appeals Committee, where the developer has appealed a determination by the Zoning Board of Appeals to award 30 units rather than the 250 units that were requested. To date, we have expended $139,168 in this litigation, and we are requesting $125,000 from free cash, not stabilization, to continue to fund the cost of litigation regarding Sudbury Station. Last year, we transferred $45,000 at town meeting, and the Finance Committee transferred $35,000 from reserve. Thank you.
Thank you. Finance Committee?
Finance Committee recommends approval 7-0. The cost to the average tax household is $20. However, there is no impact on your tax bill because it's coming from free cash, which is money we've already collected.
Thank you. Ms. Selectman?
Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Thank you. Would anyone like to be heard on Article 13? Yes, in the center.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Dave Jacob, 328 O. Lancaster. Just a point of clarification from the legal standpoint. As I understand, our original case was never heard. It was thrown out as, I won't say frivolous, but it sounded like, just reading it, I'm not a lawyer, that it didn't meet the standard of moving forward. So I'm just curious if you could comment on that.
Sure. The case was dismissed during the summary judgment period, and when a negative determination was given and quoted an award for attorney's fees at approximately $75,000. The town is currently in the appeals court, appealing both a negative determination as well as the attorney's fees, and the attorney's fees have been held in abeyance while we wait for the appeal of the summary judgment, which is what you're discussing, that the case was determined before it was heard.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
I have essentially the same question.
I'm sorry.
Thank you. Hexeret, Longfellow Road. I apologize, Madam Moderator. I'd like to hear an assessment of likelihood of success of this. You know, when a court hears a motion for summary judgment, it determines that on the undisputed facts, the adverse party is entitled to prevail as a matter of law. That's the standard for summary judgment. And when the court awards attorney's fees, the court determines that the claim was frivolous. Now, looking at that determination, I'd like to hear a cogent argument for what we're doing and where we're going and what the desirable outcome is and whether we're going to get any desirable outcome.
I will take most of that as a rhetorical comment, and if there are pieces of it, a rhetorical question, and I will then ask Ms. Rodriguez to answer the pieces of it that she may have information in her possession to answer.
Okay, so it's important to remember that we actually have many different aspects of litigation going on relating to this project. Some portion of it is the portion that you're talking about, and other portions include the HAC case as well as the abutter suit that is still slightly ongoing. As far as the land court case and the one that's in the appeals court, I think the determination on summary judgment, the case was arguing basically that there was a determination at town meeting where a deed was transferred that the town thought, or town meeting thought, had a restriction on it. And that town meeting, in good faith, passed the article because they thought there was a restriction. And so the argument that we're making in the land court is that that deed and that conveyance should not be upheld because it was not town meeting's intent. And so that is the argument that we're making in that case. It is currently being appealed. As far as the likelihood of success, as the moderator said, we will not be commenting on that. It's very difficult for us to discuss ongoing litigation at town meeting and publicly because most of these conversations happen in executive session since they concern our litigation strategy and could put the town at a disadvantage to discuss it publicly. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, all the way in the back.
Yes, Greg Hamill, 16 Pine Street. Can we have an evaluation from the Finance Committee, I assume, what our free cash was at the beginning of the meeting and what it might become at the end of the meeting based on all the things that are being passed?
I'm sorry, sir, could you repeat your name and address more slowly?
Greg Hamill, 16 Pine Street.
Is that okay? Okay, thank you.
Mr. Shea, do you have that?
So the, I'm sorry, did you want me to answer that?
Yes, if you would like to answer that.
So you started the meeting off with $1.7 million in free cash, $1.783,257 in free cash. If we vote all the articles in, do I got the right one here? I do. If we vote all the articles in, we'll have about $375,000 remaining. That is less than the Finance Committee threshold, where we'd like you to be at $477,000. So we're $100,000 short of that threshold, which is why there's one article in here, which is the cutting field, which calls for $250,000 of free cash. The Finance Committee is one of the reasons why the Finance Committee is against it. So when we looked at so to answer your question maybe at a higher level, we looked at all the free cash spending. We knew where we were at the beginning. We knew where we're going to be at the end. And we only recommended articles that would keep us within a threshold we felt comfortable.
Okay.
And one other point on that, there also is still a $5 million stabilization fund that's a rainy day fund. So free cash is just one element of this thing. There's still plenty of money in the bank if we had a major issue come up this next year.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, I'm not seeing anybody, so we will now move on to the vote. This must pass by a majority. All in favor? Thank you. Any opposed? Okay, this passes by well more than a majority. Article 14 has been withdrawn, so we will move to Article 15, and I will recognize Selectman Carty for the motion.
Thank you. Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? Already up. I love it. Thank you. And I will recognize Josh Fox from the Board of Assessors for the presentation.
Thank you, Ms. Moderator. May I have 20 extra minutes for this presentation?
Very funny. As the former moderator's son, maybe we could talk about it. But.
So this is Article 15, the means-tested senior exemption extension. I'll give you a very brief program summary. This senior real estate tax exemption program is presently set to expire on June 30th, 2018. If the town wishes to continue to offer this exemption for an additional three-year period, town meeting approval is required. This real estate tax exemption reduces real property taxes for certain low to moderate income seniors through a redistribution of the property tax burden within the residential tax base. Put another way, there's a tax burden shift from those residential property owners who receive this exemption to those who do not. The program offers tax relief only to qualifying seniors who are longtime residents of Sudbury. The maximum exemption that any taxpayer is entitled to receive under this program in any given year is 50% of the applicant's real estate tax bill. All the applicants must satisfy six criteria in order to qualify for this exemption. First, the applicant must own and occupy the property and also be at least 65 years of age. Second, if there's a co-owner other than a spouse, the co-owner must be at least 60 years of age. Third, the owner or co-owner must have lived in Sudbury for at least 10 consecutive years. Fourth, the assessed value of the home cannot exceed the prior year's average assessed value of a single-family home in Sudbury plus 10%. To put that in perspective, for fiscal year 2018, that figure is $799,600. Fifth, there's an income limit. The current annual income limits are as follows: $57,000 or less for a single filer, $86,000 or less for joint filers, or $72,000 for head of household. And sixth and finally, the applicant must not own excessive assets that place him or her outside the intended recipients of the exemption. So this is just a hypothetical of a qualifying applicant, so you understand how this exemption actually works. First of all, this applicant would be at least over the age of 65 to qualify. In this hypothetical, we're using a married filer, so the 2017 income cap, as stated previously, is $86,000. Must be a Sudbury resident for 10 or more years. The assessed valuation of the home in this scenario is $696,300, and the fiscal year 2019 estimated tax bill prior to the grant of the exemption is $12,807.30. The qualifying income for this couple in this particular case is $69,000. The other factor we look at when we're calculating this exemption is whether or not this applicant, qualifies for the Massachusetts Circuit Breaker tax. This is an income tax credit for seniors whose real estate tax bill is more than 10% of their income. So the formula is as follows. In calculating the exemption, it's equal to the total amount of the tax bill less the sum of 10% of the qualifying income and the circuit breaker credit. So as we stated in the scenario on the prior slide, the tax bill is $12,807.30. We take 10% of the qualifying circuit breaker income and we subtract that from the tax bill. In this case, it's $6,900, and we also subtract the circuit breaker credit that this person received, which in this case is $1,080. So the total amount of the exemption following the formula in this case is $4,827.30. We subtract that from the tax bill, from the original tax bill without the exemption, and we come up with a new tax bill of $7,980. Lastly, this is just a summary of the statistics for the past 5 years of implementation of this program. So you can see we started in fiscal year 14 and come up through fiscal year 18. The applications range from 125 and 124 in fiscal year 14, 132 in fiscal year 15, 103 in fiscal year 16, 111 in fiscal year 17, and 115 in fiscal year 18. Those are the numbers of applications we received, and you can see below that in the next column, it shows that we have granted almost all of those requested exemptions. The total program cost, as you can see, began in fiscal year 14 of $289,151, and is now in fiscal year 18, $414.74. So that is the shift within the residential tax base that people who do not qualify pick up that burden. So how much is that burden? Let's go to the last column. It's residential tax increase average. Beginning in fiscal year 14, that tax hit to non-qualifying people, the rest of the homeowners in town, was $45 for that year. And then up all the way to fiscal year 18, that tax hit for the non-qualifying people or all of the other residential taxpayers in town was $73. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The Finance Committee, do you wish to be heard?
We do. So the Finance Committee recommends approval of the article. So we took a look at the cost of the article and then the benefits to the town in terms of keeping seniors in their homes, deferring school costs, and it was a fairly short discussion for us. We recommend approval 7-0.
Thank you. Selectman?
Board of Selectmen unanimously support Article 15.
Great. Anyone wish to be heard on Article 15? I see no one. This requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Article 16, I will recognize Selectman Hardy for the motion.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? Thank you. And I will recognize Ms. Rodriguez for a presentation.
Thank you. Article 16 is the amending the capital planning article. Our current bylaw requires that the CIAC should study proposals from the Sudbury Town Manager, Sudbury Public Schools, and Lincoln LS Regional High School, or the representatives, which involve major tangible items with a total project cost of more than $50,000 in a single year, or over $100,000 in multiple years. This is the Town Manager's capital budget that we voted for in Article 4. I am proposing that we increase that amount to a total project cost of more than $100,000 in a single year, or over $200,000 in multiple years. The reason I'm asking for that increase is that the next section of this bylaw states that the town manager cannot put in the operating budget any projects that are greater than this threshold. So currently, if there is a capital project that is $51,000 and we have $51,000 available in the operating budget, we cannot put that item in the budget. Why do we want to make this change? It's greater efficiency and process streamlining. It allows the town to put moderate general maintenance projects in the budget rather than be required to put them forward as a separate article. Currently, the bylaw prevents including these amounts in the budget even if the funds are available under this bylaw because we are not allowed to budget for them. The CIEC would no longer be required to review articles between $50,000 and $100,000, meaning they could focus more on bigger projects. There's two projects that would be affected in the current year. One is a pickup truck that we'll see in a little bit that costs $69,000, and the other one is the LS phone system. These are two lower-cost projects that required multiple presentations in front of numerous committees due to this bylaw while they were just general maintenance. Thank you.
Thank you. Does the Finance Committee wish to be heard?
Finance Committee recommends approval on this 5-0. I should add, so Finance Committee is very cautious to ever approve articles that either take away your power to vote on articles, and this does not. We're basically just saying is we're giving them the more power to put money in, put larger capital items inside of the operating budget. You'd still be voting on it, so we think it's going to drive efficiency. It'll get us to focus on things that matter versus smaller capital items that don't. And in fact, the Finance Committee generally had a spirit that we were actually willing to go up higher than $100,000 just to make town meeting and all these things be more efficient, but they ended up on a more conservative $100,000. So Finance Committee unanimously supports 5-0.
Thank you. And Ms. Selectman?
The Board of Selectmen unanimously support this article.
Okay, thank you. Does anyone wish to be heard on this? Yes, sir.
Hi, Mark Howery, 55 Old Coach Road. I'm currently the chair of the CIAC, and I'm speaking for myself. I do not support this article at this time. I think conceptually it is a great idea. We're working on a process to really get our long-term funding of capital in order, which would also include a well-thought-out process for how each of these should be approved. And hopefully we're going to be seeing that in October. Personally, I would prefer to see this all packaged together so we could present to everybody a unified new process for how we're going to fund capital and how it's going to be approved.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard? Yes, over on this side.
Good evening. Peter Welsh, 60 Windsor Road. I'm retired now, but a substitute teacher very regularly at Curtis, which I love. But I didn't see anything about improving the Wi-Fi in any substantial way. So much of the technology at Curtis is based on, so much of the education is based on technology. There's an amazing number of places in the school that have big problems, you know, getting connection. And if this is where we want to be educationally, I think this needs to be in it. And I didn't see that put up here.
Okay, thank you for your comment.
Yeah.
Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 16? I see no one, so we will move to a vote. This requires a majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Article 17, I recognize Selectwoman Giuliano for a motion.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? Thank you. And I recognize Ms. Rodriguez.
Article 17, we're amending Article 1, Town Meeting. In May 2016, we passed a bylaw to allow for an October Town Meeting that would be held on the third Monday in October. It allowed us to schedule the start of the October Town Meeting up to and including 7 days earlier or 7 days later than the third Monday in October. Timing has become an issue, mostly due to elections and other events. And the restrictions of the timing really makes it so that we can only have town meeting in the second and third and fourth week of October, which can be rather not ideal when we have a state election coming up. What we're asking to do is change the bylaw so that the town meeting could occur in the months of September, October, or November. And it would allow the selectmen to have a discussion in public session, as well as a public hearing and a public information soliciting input during the weeks before, where they would determine whether or not a fall town meeting needs to occur. So they would have a public meeting and they would hear from people on whether or not there was a need for it. Did we have articles that people wanted to hear? If we didn't, we could determine not to have this town meeting and save approximately $12,000 that year. So in sum, this would allow us to have the town meeting in the months of September, October, or November on any date, time, and place, and we could opt not to have the meeting after a public hearing. Thank you.
Thank you. Does the Finance Committee have a statement on this?
Yeah, Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Okay. And the Selectmen?
The Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Great. Anyone wish to be heard? Yes, Mr. Coe.
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I'm a little bit concerned amount of freedom to specify the date means that it's almost impossible to plan. If you're planning to be on vacation or out of town or something like that, you have no idea when the town meeting is going to be. And I just don't think that, in principle, that that's a very good thing. I think that if you're going to move the town meeting around, then there ought to be something in the bylaw or whatever that that specifies how long notice ahead is given and so on. So I would rather wait and see maybe at this fall's town meeting, see an article that's more clearly thought out than this one appears to be.
There is a timeline in the article that says that by the end of July, we would have to have had that public session to determine whether or not the meeting would have to occur. I would anticipate around that time the date would be chosen as well. But thank you. I appreciate your comment.
Thank you. Anyone else have a comment or question? Okay.
Thank you.
I see no one. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Yes, Mr. Schneller.
Bill Schneller, 37 Jarman Road. It almost feels silly, but I was just reading the wording, and it seems like it's written that it says the words, unless the following applies, the meeting will happen. And then it says that they have a discussion in July about whether it should happen. It was a little unclear to me. It almost seems like it should be amended to say that it will not happen unless they vote in July to have it happen.
If you're suggesting an actual amendment, I need it in writing in triplicate. If it's just to see if maybe there's some clarification that could be had, I can ask Ms. Rodriguez for that. Do you wish to make a motion to amend?
I don't have one ready, but I would like some clarification because it's written.
Okay, let me see if we can get some clarification for you. What's that? Yes, I would love for you to speak to it.
Through you, Mr. Moderator, Jonathan Silverstein, Town Council. So the current bylaw requires that the town meeting take place in the fall. I believe that the intent of this bylaw amendment is to keep in place a presumption that it will take place unless the board determines by the required date that it will not take place. So I think what the speaker's suggestion, Madam Moderator, would be to create a presumption that it would not take place unless there's a determination that it will, which is just a different policy choice. But I think currently the presumption is that it would take place.
Okay. Thank you. Does anyone else wish to be heard on Article 17? I see no one, so we will move to a vote. The required vote is a majority to pass. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. And all opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Article 18, I will recognize Selectman Simon for the motion.
Article 17, amend bylaws, Article 1, town meetings, section.
I'm sorry, it's for Article 18, please. Thanks.
To 18. 18, repeal Article 5, subsection C, smoking prohibition. Move in the words of the article.
Thank you. Is there a second? Thank you. And another presentation by Ms. Rodriguez.
Thank you. This is a housekeeping article. In 2017, the Sudbury Board of Health passed comprehensive smoking regulations after a thoughtful and public process. The best place to regulate smoking in town is through those Board of Health regulations. This bylaw is very dated and contradicts the regulations passed by the Board of Health and Massachusetts general law. For an example, this bylaw states that no person shall smoke in any restaurant or public eating establishment except in specifically designated smoking areas. This prohibition does not apply in cases in which an entire room or hall is used for a private social function. So as you can see, these are quite dated bylaws, and we should be using the regulations instead. So we're requesting that you repeal this bylaw.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Does the Finance Committee wish to be heard?
Finance Committee takes no position on the article.
Okay. The Selectmen?
Selectmen unanimously support this article.
Great. Would anyone like to be heard on Article 18? Yes, Mr. Coe.
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I'm curious as to whether it's just a total coincidence that a change to the smoking bylaw is proposed just as the new marijuana law is starting to come into effect. To me, this is a solution in search of a problem at this point. The regulations that the Board of Health promulgates can presumably be changed by them at any time. This at least says that the town meeting gets some say in those changes. So I would like to see this article defeated tonight and maybe brought up again next year. Because the fact that it may be a little bit out of sync with the Board of Health regulations, I don't think it's going to make any difference, any practical difference. And I just don't see any reason for a rush to do this right now.
Thank you for your comment. Does anyone else wish to be heard? I see no one, so we will vote. This requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. We will move on to Article 19 with a motion by Selectwoman Brown.
Article 19, amend Article 5, Section 3, Regulation of Dogs, Section 3 to 5, Hearing Officer. Move in the words of the article.
Thank you. Is there a second? Thank you. Ms. Rodriguez.
Thank you. Amending Article 5, Section 3, Regulation of Dogs. We have a bylaw in town that governs all dogs, including vaccinations, registration, kennels, nuisance, damage, and dangerous dog declarations. Within this bylaw is a section that governs the hearing officer, and it states that the Board of Selectmen shall act on all matters pertaining to the enforcement of this bylaw and the settling of any disputes between the dog owner, the town, and its residents. We are proposing a change. The change is the red language that says the hearing authority shall investigate or cause the investigation of the complaint. This would allow the Board of Selectmen to delegate the investigation of the complaint to town staff, typically within the police department. The board will still be responsible for making all determinations and will still have a public hearing. This will improve efficiency and allow the town to process complaints faster and deal with dangerous dogs quickly. The state law allows for the hearing authority to have the hearing investigated by a third party. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Does the Board of Selectmen have a position on this?
Board of Selectmen unanimously supports this article.
Okay, thank you. Would anyone like to be heard on Article 19? Yes, Mrs. Coe.
Martha Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I'd like to know why it's not the dog officer that would be the hearing authority. A hearing authority sounds like a board, but the dog officer knows who the bad dogs are in the town and so on. They get the complaints and so forth.
I'll ask Ms. Rodriguez to answer that, please.
The hearing authority is, in fact, the Board of Selectmen. The dog officer, the animal control officer, is the person who typically brings the complaints to the board. They usually are a witness at the hearing, and they usually bring information forward about a dog that has dangerous or been declared a nuisance. So they are certainly a very imperative part of the process, but they are not the hearing officer.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? I see no one, so we will move to a vote. This requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority. Article 20. I will recognize Selectman Carty for the motion.
Article 20, amend zoning bylaw, Article 7000, Section 2230, Appendix A, marijuana. Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? Thank you. And I will recognize Megan Donahue and Chief Nix for the presentation.
Thank you, Madam Moderator.
Thank you. Good evening. Happy Monday. Scott Nix, Chief of Police, and Megan Donahue.
Director of Planning and Community Development. I'm here tonight on behalf of the Planning Board this evening to discuss amending the Zoning Bylaw Article 7000 and Section 2230, Appendix A, Table of Use. Principal use for recreational marijuana establishments.
And if I might add, we're not here to endorse or try to shut down. We're just here to put the pros and cons for the audience to make those decisions of whether it's appropriate or not. So again, we're not here to endorse one way or the other. So if asked, we will not do so.
Thank you. To provide context, in November 2016, Sudbury residents... It's very sensitive. I need to go back, please. There you go. Thank you. In November 2016, Sudbury residents voted no to question 4 to legalize marijuana in the statewide election. The vote was 5,518 to 5,291, a difference of 227 votes. However, statewide, voters approved the legalization of marijuana. At the May 2017 annual town meeting, the community voted to impose a temporary moratorium on marijuana establishments, allowing the town to properly plan and address zoning needs. The moratorium is set to expire at the end of June. Earlier this year, the Planning Board held a public hearing to discuss the zoning amendment to ban outright any recreational or commercial marijuana establishments throughout any zone in town. The Planning Board voted unanimously to support the article as written to oppose the outright ban. So the bylaw amendment would prohibit commercial retail or retail marijuana establishments, including marijuana retailers, marijuana cultivators, marijuana testing facilities, marijuana product manufacturers, and any other type of licensed marijuana-related businesses, as defined in Massachusetts General Laws, Chapter 94G, Section 1, in any zoning district throughout town. The amendment would also include changing the table of principal use, placing an N in each column for each district. It is important to note that medicinal marijuana is subject to different zoning and is allowed in limited areas within the town of zoning, within the town of Sudbury zoning bylaw. It is also important to note the amendment does not restrict the personal use or at-home cultivation of marijuana. It's frozen. I'll just continue. To pass the zoning amendment, there needs to be a two-thirds vote, and if there's not enough to carry the motion, there are several positive economic impacts to having recreational marijuana sites, including towns may set licensing fees to limit the number of marijuana retailers to fewer than 20% of a number of retail liquor licenses, such as package stores. Also, as required by the Cannabis Control Commission, which is the state agency, the town would have to enter a host community agreement with a commercial marijuana establishment. Within that host community agreement, the town would could negotiate a community impact fee, which is an optional tax, local tax, of up to 3% of gross sales to be paid to the host community, as long as the fee is reasonably related to the real costs imposed on the municipality due to the commercial establishment or medical marijuana treatment center operating there. However, these impact fees are only effective for 5 years, and per the regulations of the Cannabis Control Commission, and would have to be renegotiated after that 5-year period. The town could also negotiate an additional optional 3% local excise tax for retail establishments. No.
So where are we at if this does not pass tonight? Basically, we're at with no zoning bylaws in place for the marijuana commercial industry, the adult commercial industry. We're also at an area where we have a lot of concerns. You've always heard me talk about safety, and that's paramount for everybody, right? Safety, safety, safety. For that of our adults as well as the children. This is some uncharted territory for us. So, you know, some of the stuff was speculation of what might be an issue here. But there's a recent report that came out, Smart Approach for Marijuana, that really kind of confirms a lot of what my concerns are. One of those are operating under the influence of drugs, as well as the accidents that are caused. You'll see in that report, if you choose to research after the fact, that there is an increase in both the operating under the influence of drugs for marijuana as well as motor vehicle accidents and fatalities as a result of. This is a difficult area for us as officers to even enforce. You have breathalyzer tests for alcohol, and you have standard field sobriety tests for testing for the impairment of alcohol. There is no test for marijuana as it stands right now. There is not even a determination of what exactly meets an intoxicated or impaired level. The courts have actually specifically said that officers can't even offer their testimony as far as the level of impairment with such things. That brings us to a real bad risk, right? It's hard enough to just get an OUI conviction. If somebody refuses a breathalyzer test or refuses a field sobriety test, we can't even testify to that in courts because it's prejudicial. Now you're going up against a jury or a judge with not even having the proper tests in order to go forward. So, I mean, that's definitely an area of concern. That's an area of concern we see now. But with the augmentation of, you know, retail establishments, that's a concern that may even increase further. Violations in the report, probably half of them, around thereabouts, were actually selling to minors at their new retail establishments. That's something we absolutely don't want. And the perception of youth, because it has been legalized for adults, is they almost feel empowered to now imbibe in it because of the fact that it's a lesser threshold of what you have to get over. So the kids do an amazing job with getting a designated driver when they're drinking, right? Not that we're condoning drinking, but they do an excellent job of getting that. But kids and adults alike think it's okay to drive while having been smoking, and that's not okay. It impairs you. We've seen it, but we, again, have a very much lack of prosecution for that. Exposures to children, you know, accidental poisonings. If you're able to go down to a retail establishment and pick it up and you've got your okay kid brownie and your not okay kid brownie and they accidentally swap that out. In the SAM report, there's a lot of increases in hospital room visits with poisonings and things along those lines. School ramifications, again, because of that threshold, there's a lot more school ramifications of suspensions and stuff contained in the report. Again, concern for us here. You would have thought that the illegal grow operations were decreased. That's not the case. They're trying to circumvent the taxes. So Colorado has seen a 50% increase in their illegal grow operations. You know, it was the hope that you would see opioid use decrease. That is not the case. It is still increasing within this report. There's some statistics that show that there's increased crime in areas where there are marijuana establishments. So, again, these are all kind of concerns. There's many others. I don't want to drag it on out. But from the public safety perspective, we are definitely concerned as far as ramifications of bringing establishments into Sudbury. I do want to point out we're not endorsing one way or the other. You still have your ability as the laws take to cultivate your own and or use your own within your personal residence. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Does the Finance Committee have a position on this?
Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Okay. Selectmen?
Board of Selectmen unanimously support Article 20.
Thank you. And now I will see if there's anyone in the hall that would like to be heard. I'll start in the center right there.
Sue Stein, 53 Stone Road, and I have a question about whether we're actually voting on just amending the bylaws to include definitions, or is this actually a vote to opt out and prohibit any of these establishments?
This is a vote to opt out of allowing any sort of establishments in creating a bylaw preventing it for adult use facilities. It does not change the medical marijuana bylaw that is already in place.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I realize I made a mistake in not recognizing the planning board. I thought in my notes it has here that the planning board wanted to speak, but if that's not the case, we'll just move on. Does anyone on the planning board have a statement? Hang on. I'll just wait for a microphone. And also your name and address.
Stephen Garvin, 26 Bowditch Road, chairman. The planning board unanimously voted to support this article.
Great. Thank you. Okay, and I had thought I was recognizing someone in the center in the blue shirt.
Yeah, Paul, 564 Peckham Road. I don't think it's necessary to comment, but I think I have a unique bit of background to share that may help people understand what the effect is of legalized marijuana in a local setting, especially around high schools. I grew up in the Netherlands, probably one of the most open countries when it comes to marijuana. First of all, I think the country here is not ready for that kind of open legal use of marijuana. It's a whole culture there that supports it, that makes it, I guess, a safe experience, even though I don't necessarily agree with that. My personal experience, my high school across the street, there was a retailer. I think the majority of my friends going through high school was basically high throughout high school. I did not see the same ability to succeed as I generally experience here, and I think a lot of that from my observations was contributed to the fact that marijuana was so broadly available and so widely used. I think this is one of the main reasons why I personally want my children to grow up here, so that they don't have that same experience. That's my point.
Thank you very much. Excuse me, no clapping. Excuse me. Hey, excuse me. Please, I would ask you to refrain from clapping or any other signs of anything one way or another on any comment. Thank you. All the way in the back.
Lydia Pastuzik, 15 Griffin Lane. I feel compelled to stand up and ask the town to consider the benefits of zoning changes that permit retail sales and cultivation of marijuana. The world is changing dramatically. Has the town really considered the benefits? I drive through town. I see a lot of vacant retail shops. We're going to have a lot of new shops opening up at Meadow Walk. The whole retail world is changing. Go into the mall. As a matter of principle, should we be banning certain types of businesses in our town without thoroughly studying the costs and benefits? Further, agriculture is very much alive in Sudbury. 5% of the jobs in Sudbury are in agricultural employment. For the whole Middlesex County, that number is about 0.5%. Why close down an opportunity for growers to potentially make money and keep agriculture alive? Oops, sorry. I don't need that. Thanks. By the way, the town of South Hadley, which is approximately the size of Sudbury in population, 17,500, I think of as being an agricultural community because all my asparagus that I eat, if it's not from Verrill Farms, it's from South Hadley. But they only have less than 0.5% of their employment in agriculture. So Sudbury does stand out as having pretty much the leading agricultural employment. So with all due respect to Chief Nix, the safety issues that he raises will happen whether or not there's a store in Sudbury. The referendum on legalizing marijuana has been passed and voted, and now we have to sensibly implement it. Nobody may ever want to open a marijuana store in Sudbury, but I really think we have to say, did we properly consider the effect of banning that sort of business opportunity in our town when we could make a lot of money? The statistics show that the revenue generated by a marijuana store approaches $2 million a year. That's a very high volume of sales for per square foot, so the town could stand to make some money. I personally don't use marijuana. Now, I did grow up in the 60s and 70s, so I can't say I didn't inhale it. But I just am talking from an economic point of view and about where our town is going and the whole retail world. Thanks.
Thank you for your comments. Yes, Mr. Alwan.
Thank you. Rami Alwan, 119 Pantry Road. While I would really rather not see a retail marijuana establishment in Sudbury, as the woman who spoke before me said, it's here to stay. And marijuana is a sort of a fact in Massachusetts going forward. And I went to the talk that Chief Nix gave last week on marijuana. And what he said from the SAM report is we're going to see an increase in accidents, an increase in need for officer training, an increase in social and psychological support for families, increase in hospitalizations requiring ambulance services, increase in illegal activity, all of which comes with a cost. So a piece of me is disappointed that the Finance Committee didn't take a stand on this. The one thing that we can do, the only thing we can do, that will recoup any of that cost is charge the 3% in excise tax. So banning it outright across the board, as I said, I would rather not see a retail establishment growing it. It's going to get transported through our town whether we like it or not, because the police can't stop that and the law is written in that way. So I think we should really consider whether or not this is something that we want to vote whole cloth or have a slightly more nuanced ban or change to our bylaws. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Yes, sir.
Hexer at Longfellow Road. I am an admitted child of the 60s, and I've been campaigning for legalized marijuana since then. I am delighted that we now have legalized marijuana in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and I think we should have legalized marijuana here in Sudbury. I've heard the arguments that the chief advanced. They were advanced in Colorado, and Colorado is paving the way to a pretty good policy for the handling of marijuana. Effectively, because of the ratio of liquor stores to marijuana facilities, we're talking about one or maybe two stores. So really, if this passes, we're talking about an inconvenience to Sudbury residents who would then have to go to Framingham or Acton or Waltham to buy. It's not going to cut down on the use. The use of marijuana has been pretty constant since even the 60s, even when it was illegal and you had to sort of buy it illegally. I bought it illegally. I did smoke it in Colorado. But look, marijuana's here. I think Sudbury would be ill-advised to ban it. Sudbury would have one other economic benefit to having a marijuana shop here in town. I'm really talking about just one. And it would only be allowed in areas where there are commercial stores. You wouldn't be able to put it up a marijuana commercial establishment in a residential neighborhood. That would not be permitted even if this is defeated. It would be allowed only in commercial establishments. Now, we talk about kids and marijuana and kids and alcohol. We have been enforcing the law on alcohol for kids for generations. We've had some success. I think if we have legalized marijuana, it is more likely that that will drive out the illicit market and reduce the likelihood that kids would get it. I think this should be defeated.
Thank you for your comment. Yes, on this side. I'll start toward the back. Then toward the front where the microphone is coming, and then I'll recognize you.
Glenn Pransky, 102 Barton Drive. I've been a public health researcher for 25 years. I recently chaired a half-day symposium on the effects of marijuana, primarily focusing on the workplace, but we examined a lot of data from Colorado, so I think it's time for a couple of facts here. The Colorado situation is not very good. Over the past 8 years, 600% increase in child admissions for acute poisoning to emergency rooms. And the data on what happens to neighborhoods around marijuana shops is not good either. And as Chief Nick stated, a lot of the data shows the most significant increase in problems have to do with kids who obtain marijuana in that local area because it's within walking distance, and that's where they hang out. I think the data, the public health data, shows that whatever few pennies we get in revenues for this doesn't compare at all to the significant impact, and I strongly support this proposal.
Thank you for your comment. And yes, in the same side of the room, further back.
Thank you. My name is James Brownell. I'm at Horse Pond Road in Sudbury, 97 Horse Pond Road. I've been a lawyer for 30 years, so I've certainly seen a lot of the issues surrounding the drug marijuana. I mean, to my mind, the only thing this does, this Article 20, would be actually reduce the tax dollars coming into Sudbury. It's not going to keep marijuana out of town. It's not going to keep any of the problems that the police are worried about in town. Basically, the only result will be we're going to lose money. It's going to, as far as minors, I think having this place where adults go to purchase marijuana is going to keep minors from purchasing it. Minors can't go into a marijuana store or a liquor store and ask for something. When I was a kid, I recall, in our high school, you could always get marijuana. It wasn't hard to get. But the problem with it back then, and this was back in the early 70s, was, well, geez, I don't have any pot today, but I got something else for you. Why don't you try this? You know, and it's like, well, I don't know. Well, no, everyone's doing it. I mean, that's where you get the problems, to my mind, is people going on to stronger drugs, especially opiates. There's an issue, of course, with driving under the influence, and there are quite a few of those cases that come up. Those are usually dealt with driving under the influence of drugs. And, of course, there is no driving under the influence of marijuana test just yet because it stays in your bloodstream 30 days. But driving under the influence of drugs, there's many prosecutions, and there have been successful prosecutions in Massachusetts, some of that. There is actually, as far as Colorado, I've read that there is much less of a problem with heroin overdoses in Colorado because of this. And I don't know if anyone's heard this on the news, but there is a major problem in Massachusetts, including this town, with heroin overdoses. Now, whether that will affect us or not, I have no idea. As far as the schools, I mean, this would, probably prevent some kids from getting this in school and obviously prevent kids from getting stronger drugs than this. We have pot now. You're putting your head in the sand and pretending it doesn't exist doesn't help the matter. The fact is, there is pot now. There's pot. I'm sure there's pot in LS. There was pot in my high school when I was there in the early 70s. I would imagine that it's something kids can get now if they decided to. I fail to see how having it, if there was a major pot shop in Sudbury and we came up for town, I assume that we have to go to the planning board. We could vote this down if it came up, that this is like a solution waiting for a problem to happen. This basically will bring this out of the shadows as far as people getting pot. And I mean, what are we talking about? Well, geez, I mean, there is pot at shop in Sudbury. Oh, no, actually, it's like 30 yards away in Marlboro. Well, I guess it is in Sudbury. I don't really see the difference. That's the way I take on it.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comment. I'm getting the sense that we've heard a balanced amount from both sides. I'm thinking it might be time to move to a vote, but if you have something new to add to the discussion, I would be happy to entertain your comment. Thank you. Yes, in the front here.
William Miniscalco, 126 Hemlock Road. I have some questions about this proposed bylaw. Now, I can understand the concern about retail establishments. There's certainly been a lot of issues raised about the potential risks there. But as I understand it, this bylaw will prohibit all aspects of the business, including cultivation, manufacturing, I would say the wholesale end of the business that does not sell to individuals. And no reasons were given why that's in the bylaws, what the risks are there. And so I would like to know why those prohibitions are in there, why a cultivator who does not sell to individuals, why that should be prohibited.
I will see if Ms. Onihu or Chief Nix would like to address that.
So there's security concerns with cultivators as well, the attraction of people trying to break in and things like that, attracting people to that specific area. You know, it's the planning board that wanted to propose everything going. If it is voted tonight in favor, it could always be changed again. And gone back once we get things more steadily. The gentleman pointed out that the Colorado issues and stuff like that, that's all statistical data that I could go way further into, but there are some security concerns surrounding those.
Thank you. Of course.
I think to add to that is, Ted, what Chief Nix said is we could do the outright ban now and then do some further research and then amend the bylaw later on to address what the town of Sudbury would want. But right now, this is covering all aspects because we have zero zoning for commercial retailers and commercial establishments.
Thank you. Yes, I will recognize Ms. Rodriguez to make a clarification.
I just wanted to clarify one thing. Can you hear me? Okay, I just wanted to clarify one thing that I did hear. In order to limit the number of establishments to 20%, of package stores, so we have four package stores here in town, and there was some conversation about only one retail establishment being allowed. That actually requires a bylaw. So right now we would be subject to unlimited licenses. We are not restricted only to one right now. That would require a separate bylaw.
Okay, thank you.
Retail is actually by right in many of our zoning areas, and we would consider this to be retail, so it would not require a special permit.
Okay.
And in Colorado, they actually have more marijuana retail establishments than they do McDonald's and Starbucks combined. Just a little fact from the report.
So I see one more card. I'll take, I think, one more comment, and then we'll go to the vote. All the way in the back, right near the doors. Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Vicki McKenzie, Maynard Road.
Sorry, could you please repeat your name more slowly?
Vicki McKenzie.
Thank you.
I definitely share Chief Nix's concerns about the irresponsible use, but just as I do with alcohol, I wondered if it's possible to amend this bylaw for the cultivation, though, because I do feel that the medicinal purposes especially are extremely beneficial, and it would not be pennies to the town. It would actually be millions to the town, which would help us from raising our taxes and covering a lot of these big-ticket items that we're voting on tonight and will continue to need for the town. Security is definitely a huge concern, but as farmers, cultivators, I think it's a little bit different than a place that you could go into, like a bar. Maybe limiting, as you said, amending the bylaw to limit the number so that it didn't become an overrun of the town, that would not necessarily be a great thing. But as cultivators and the benefits to the town, I think it would far outweigh making a rash decision. As some of the other folks have said, they're going to do it in other towns and make the money in the other towns too. So thank you for your consideration.
Okay. Thank you for your comment. I think we're ready to move to a vote. Because this is an amendment of our bylaws, it requires a two-thirds vote in favor to pass. Would all in favor of Article 20 please raise your cards? Okay, thank you. All opposed? I'd like to see the vote one more time. All in favor, please. Thank you. And all opposed? This feels close for me to call based just on the raising of cards. I will ask for one more method before I go to the process of calling for an actual count, which is to have a standing vote, which I think is easier for me to see. And I'm going to do a little more estimation with numbers. So please bear with me and please stay quiet while I do this. So all in favor, please stand. Thank you. Okay, all opposed, please stand. Okay, thank you, one moment. Okay, I find that that passes by more than two-thirds. Article 21, DPW rolling stock replacement. A motion by Selectman Hardy, please.
Article 21, DPW rolling stock replacement. Move in the words of the article with the sum of $60,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Thank you. Is there a second? You could have asked for a count, yes. Hang on 1 second. I'm not sure when that would have had to come in. What's that? Left? Okay. I'm afraid that the moment for that has passed because people have left the hall since the vote. So that is a good lesson for all of us, that if you care about an issue, please stay until town meeting is adjourned or dissolved because things can happen. So, yes. Do you have a point of order in the back? Could you...
Mark Howery, 55 Old Coach Road. Is it possible if he wanted to make an article to reconsider or a motion to reconsider? Is that possible?
Yes, that is possible. Okay, thank you. I'm ready to move on then. Oh.
Sorry, they were asking because I couldn't. Robert Began, 25 Pine Street. So I just had said that I was just curious if we could have had a count. I'm not looking for any procedural change.
Okay. So just to clarify to everyone, I felt confident in my own estimation, so I did not call for the count. Someone could have immediately requested a count, and I would have, of course, allowed that. But since the request came in a little bit after we had concluded that article and folks had left already, I did not feel that it would be fair to go back and take another count. But there is something called a motion to reconsider that is an option at this point if people feel that the sentiment in the hall is vastly different than it was 5 minutes ago in terms of how the vote might go. And would like to spend time doing that, we can. But I would say if there is not that, then we will move on. And I see no one, so I will move to Article 19. I do see a card in the back. Do you have a point of order or a motion?
I feel that it was unfair that you moved out of that article so quickly onto the next one that it does warrant a reconsider, but it is disappointing that people walked out. How do you have a chance for people to come back and reconsider this? Is it too late to do that?
You could make what is called a motion to reconsider, and we could return to the previous article if the motion to reconsider passes. So there would be a motion and a second.
Yes, a motion to reconsider.
Okay, then that needs to be... No, not in writing. It just is a motion to reconsider. Hang on one second. I've not done this before, so let me figure this out.
Me either.
Okay. I know what I'm doing. Ready? All right. So, ma'am, let's start again. You may rise, say your name and address, and make a motion.
Vicki McKenzie, Maynard Road. And I would like to make a motion to reconsider.
Which article?
Article 20.
Okay.
And can I also say and or to amend for cultivation? Or is that not? I have no idea.
No, that is not allowed.
I have no idea.
Hang on.
Is that all I have to do? Thank you. Thank you.
Right. Okay, so the way this works, so you've made your motion to reconsider Article 20. I will need a second of that. Great. And now I'm just explaining. We're not actually doing yet. So after the second, then we would have a discussion about whether to reconsider. And then we would vote another two-thirds vote on whether or not to return to Article 20 as a new discussion of the article. At that point, someone could make a motion to amend Article 20 itself, and then we would discuss that amendment and vote on that before returning back to Article 20 for another vote. So is that clear as mud to everyone? Okay. But right now what we need to do is, I did see a second for the motion to reconsider, and so now I will see if anyone would like to be heard on the merits of reconsideration. Yes, sir.
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. The question, I guess this might be the time to ask for your ruling that if we did reconsider and if someone made a motion to allow the cultivation or some other part of what's being prohibited here, would you or would you not rule that within the four corners of the article?
I don't make rulings on theoretical amendments. So now, anyone else wish to be heard on reconsideration? Yes, Mr. Morley.
Yes. Yes. Chris Morley, 321 Old Lancaster Road. As someone who... uncharacteristically abstained from that vote. It does seem not good that people left the hall who may have voted either way when they voted. On the other hand, it does seem, I mean, no offense to the moderator, but I can see where people would like to have a count. Isn't it more common to reconsider the next night of town meeting? That seems to me that that is what has happened in the past, much more commonly. And people are nodding yes in the audience.
I'm going to ask town council to...
I will also just state my memory is also that whenever that happens, it never succeeds in changing the original vote. But there's always a first time.
Thank you. I will ask town council to comment.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Section 13 of Article 1 of your bylaws provides for reconsideration, and it provides a different procedure for reconsidering on a subsequent session of town meeting. So clearly it's contemplated, and it's actually a less onerous procedure because you don't have to do it in writing. You don't have to have, I think, 15 people sign it to do reconsideration on the same night as the original vote.
Thank you. Mr. Alwan.
Rami Alwan, 119 Pantry Road. This is a procedural question. Now that this has failed, if we wanted to come back in
our... Nothing has failed, actually. Let me just make that clear.
Okay.
Article 20 is still standing as a motion that passed. We are talking about whether or not we want to return to it as a motion with a motion to reconsider on the floor right now.
So a question I guess I have is, can we come back in October and amend this further, or is this a done deal forever?
I believe there could be a process by which amendments could be made, yes. So it can be amended at a future date. Yes, Mr. Surratt.
I don't know what the vote would have been if there was a count, but I think there should have been. And so I question the moderator's ruling on that.
I'm sorry that I didn't...
I didn't jump up fast enough before you hit the gavel. I apologize for not being quicker to my feet. But as I understand it, a subsequent motion to amend this bylaw would require a two-thirds majority because it would be amending a zoning bylaw. If we reconsider now, we'd have to pass that by a majority vote, as I understand, and then that would be back to the main motion.
The motion to reconsider whether or not to return to the motion is a two-thirds. Yes, right. So right now we're talking about whether or not to reconsider Article 20, and the required vote for reconsideration has to be two-thirds. Yes, Mr. Semple.
Brian Semple, 15 Revere Road. So if we vote against this tonight, does that mean the people can still go and put 15 voters in by noon tomorrow and reconsider tomorrow night? And that way everybody that left can show up and you can do it again tomorrow night? We can do it tomorrow night? Is that true?
So...
Or once it's down for reconsideration, are you done?
The usual rule. There's nothing in that.
What's that? You done it?
There is nothing specifically spelled out in our bylaws for that scenario, but under the manual for moderators that has been adopted through our bylaw, there is only one motion to reconsider allowed on any given article. In the middle there, please.
Point of order, Kathy Jacob, 328 Old Lancaster Road. Point of order, it's after 10:30. Isn't that time after the time when we can make any more motions or take up anything new?
Thank you for pointing that out. Yes, technically, in order to continue, at 10:30, whichever article is under discussion can be completed without any action by the hall. In order to start a new article, I would need to ask for permission from the hall to continue. So we will conclude this motion to reconsider and then see what happens. Mr. Morley, you've already been heard on this, and the hour, as someone just pointed out, is late. Let me recognize...
I guess a procedural comment, sorry. It would be... Is it possible... It's a question. Is it possible to withdraw a motion?
Is it possible to withdraw a motion? Yes.
I would suggest to the people who are making this motion that they withdraw... Do the 15 signatures and come back tomorrow night for a better chance of passage.
That's not really a point of order. That's a strategic thing.
I didn't say it was a point of order.
Okay, well, please. Representative Gentile. Okay, I have a motion on... I have received a motion to call the question, which is not debatable. It requires a two-thirds vote. All in favor of moving the question? It's the motion to reconsider. The result of this is to end debate on the motion to reconsider. Yes, you may make a point of order.
Can I withdraw the motion to have it tomorrow?
No.
I'm sorry?
I'm in the middle. The question has been called. I am entertaining a call of the question, and I should not have recognized you. It is now time for a vote on the call of the question. All in favor of calling the question on the motion to reconsider, please raise your cards. It's to end debate on the motion to reconsider and take a vote on that. We are voting on whether or not to end debate. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? Okay, that passes by well more than two-thirds. And now we will take a vote on the motion to reconsider Article 20. This needs two-thirds to pass. All in favor of reconsideration of Article 20, please raise your cards. All opposed? That fails. And since it's past 10:37, or past 10:30 more to the point, I will now take a motion to adjourn until tomorrow evening, May 8th at 7:30 p.m. in this room. Thank you. Is there a second? Okay, all in favor of adjournment? It needs a majority. Thank you. All opposed? Okay, see you tomorrow night.